This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Weekend Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on?
Oh, same old Pete. Doing good, but you know what time of year it is? It's G1 season, so I think we have to ex-nay all banter at the top of the show and focus primarily on all of the wrestling that we're going to be talking about.
No, I
got to
get something off my chest, though, brother.
Oh, okay.
If you saw this fucking StarCast all-in fucking package on the Fight Network.
No. Oh, no. What is this?
Okay, well, you can listen to all the fucking podcasts, I guess, and you get a $20 credit on any show on Fight Network, but it's 150 bones.
This is $150, and it's just an add-on, like a Patreon add-on to
thing? It's through the Fight Network.
Oh,
I guess that's where they're doing all-in is through the Fight Network. So gotcha. I guess you get all in, and then you get opportunity for all the listen to all the podcasts live as they do it at the StarCast convention for $150.
And it shows that, like, you know, the stuff with the Young Bucks and Cody and Conrad, where they kind of were acting as if he's just like a vendor that's doing a thing during the time with them, and not like he's also tied in.
I would pay $150 for that.
Okay. This is all very, very interesting. I think I heard them plugging it on something to wrestle, but it didn't register to me, or like I didn't look into the cost and everything that was actually being said or something.
Yeah, they're kind enough because the $150 is a discount. Normally, a package of this price would be $349. No, they have that scratched off, and they have $150.
Wait, it was like that cheesy that they even showed stuff like that? That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, you got to be the biggest mark to fucking do that. I mean, yeah, this is an important show, but fuck, who the fuck can listen to fucking 50 hours of pay for that much money for fucking podcasts? And a show. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, fuck. WrestleMania tickets are cheaper than that fucking live.
Oh, that is so good. Wow. Okay. Well,
would you even contemplate spending money on that?
No, none of it. I'm not gonna waste money on any of it, especially because most of the podcasts are, you know, what they are. And I don't need.
I don't need to listen to fucking Colt Cabana. I don't need to fucking listen to Conrad. I don't need to fucking listen to fucking whoever Meltzer. I don't even know if Meltzer's part of it, since he must be if they're paying him. You know. And you know, I don't need to listen to Bruce Mitchell. I don't need to listen to Ryan whatever his name is. I mean, it's just, oh God. I don't need to listen to Aubrey Citizen, since he fucking hates me. I mean, it's like. Fuck.
What did Aubrey Citizen say? I didn't know that he hates.
We got into a big. Well, Will was on a show one time with him.
Oh yeah.
And it all blew up, and then Parva took over my Twitter feed and was attacking all Citizen and his followers.
So
I've been blocked, and then his followers were arguing with me because then Parva wasn't there around there to make the arguments back with him. So I was the only one arguing with him.
Oh, man. But yeah, either way, I mean, I get enough of podcasts and all that stuff for free, too much even, of wrestling content especially, let alone paying for extra just because it happens to be at the Young Bucks pool party. Like, I don't really care that much about it. This all-in thing
I mean, I haven't looked closely, but I know they're offering all the damn podcasts. And I'm assuming you get the show as part of the Fight Network thing, but $150 for that, for not even leaving your living room—that's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, man, but it's, I mean, it's weird. I don't know, this whole thing is...
You could buy Powerbomb all year long. You could buy High Spots Network all year long. You could buy the WWE Network all year long. You could buy New Japan Pro all year long. And that's eventually the fucking show will be on there. And the All-In show will eventually be on New Japan World. And, I mean, frack, you can have the whole year's worth for what they're asking for.
Right, exactly. I mean, hey.
I'm not usually this miser, but my gosh, it's just insane. And maybe because I'm going to, like, Scenic City Invitational, where, I'm paying $15 for two freaking shows. You know, $30 for two shows, $15 each. Front four seat, row seats for some damn good entertainment, good wrestling. A show that has a track record of delivering. And I mean, and unbelievable. And I'm not going to be by myself. And speaking of that, I'm in the hot dog eating contest. You know, Tank, you betters, you should have just stayed out of retirement. I'm going to whoop you. Ben, even though you have the insulin going, so you have an advantage. So I think Ben might take it, but I'm gonna do my best to represent the podcast. I'll tell you that.
Fantastic. I think. Are you representing just this podcast or podcasts on the network in general?
I'm representing this week in wrestling and Worldcast.
Gotcha. Perfect. There you go.
Old school, new school, hot dog eating contest. Matt Cross, Matt Lynch, you get out of, you're going down. Matt Sells, you're going down. Whoever else is in this thing, I'm taking it home. You don't have to be a wrestler to be able to eat a lot of hot dogs. I'll tell you that, mister.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, since we do have a lot of G1 to talk about.
Oh yeah,
and other stuff. So let's just get right into this. You ready?
Yeah, for sure.
I just need to vent about that damn StarCast crap.
No, I get you, man. I didn't know all that, so that's huge.
Maybe I need to look a little closer at it, but that's just from what I was like glancing at. So I mean, maybe I'm misinterpreting it and misreading it, but that's how I'm taking it anyway. Just obscene. We're opening up with MLW Fusion episode 13. You know, this again, they have good talent. They have good announcing. The crowd seems into the stuff they're doing. I just think they just need to tighten up their creativity a little bit, and maybe, you know, again, come up with the not try to mimic the WWE so much. But I liked a lot what we had here on the show. What about you overall?
Yeah, same general feeling. It's been like that the whole time, which is, I don't know. There's some stuff that really I just confused by still. The stud staple kind of stuff is like awkward.
I don't mind them. I mean, I just think they just got to embrace and be old school and allow them to heal it up and cheat. But just some of the stuff is like, you know, you have on their big show, they're talking about one of the matches for the brand new middleweight title. So you want to get this title off of the bang. You have MGF. I'm all for that. I think he's a great heel. And but who is he facing on the show? Joey Ryan. Do you really want to get your title over right off the bat? In the first match, and then the first match is with Joey Ryan.
I didn't know that was one of the matches on the show. Is that the Battle Riot show?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a brand new title,
brand new middleweight belt, and they're going to have Joey Ryan as one of the final two people vying for it. I think that's a mistake. You know, I'm not a big Joey Ryan guy, and I know you're not either. And I understand he does have a cult following, and he has a different psychology of wrestling that I don't like and don't particularly care for, but it does have its followers, so I understand that. But in no shape or form, even though he has a lot of followers and has a lot of fans, there's no way he should be in your company and if you're trying to get your company over, you should not be being the first person vying for the title, for an up and grab for winner gets the title type of thing. I mean, it's just a bad decision.
Yeah, for some reason I thought that the maybe because I do kind of remember the advertisement now, and I thought that it was saying that MJF was already the champion.
No, he's it's up for grabs. Yeah,
got it. Okay,
brand new middleweight belt.
Yeah, that's
huh. And even if he was defending it, I mean, Joey Ryan's not that guy who needs a belt or should be going. I mean, if he's going to do a shtick, he sure shouldn't be challenging for a belt. You know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You gotta keep, you know, that's the good differences between good bookers and bad bookers. You don't want to bring that goddamn comedy or the farciness into your title pictures and stuff. You keep it away from it and have it live in its own little entity in a way. If you're going to do it, I mean, me personally, it wouldn't be on my show. But to have it in a title picture is just ungodly, just ridiculous. I enjoyed Parker introducing the Stud Stable. I like the Dirty Blondes, and I like Pero. I like that group. I like Jake Hagar. I like the Blondes. It's kind of like the old school heel, you know, faction. I like that. I like Pero. It's kind of like the muscle, the bodyguard. I like Hagar, as your as kind of like your ace of the group. I can get behind this group, and but they've just got to, you know, they got to embrace it and go for it. They also need to give them some credibility too, because I mean, it is easy to look at them and like, man, what a bunch of dodos, you know, where you got to treat them seriously and book them seriously for the act to get over. So like, you're not liking it right now. Is it because of the way they're being booked, or you just don't like the act in general, or
it's just like the mixing of the whole thing? The Dirty Blondes, I've talked about it, my issues with them being heels and seeming like they're interacting with Lawler as if Lawler's are also heels, and then Jake Hagar,
yeah, that whole scenario is like, I would never be booking them against straight shooters, you know.
Yeah, but then Jake Hagar comes in and like, he's, I don't know, to me, he comes across as a babyface, and like, so he's still in the group, and he seems to be like the ace of the group, like you said, and it almost seems like it would make sense to turn him, but I really don't think they have any plan to, based on the booking. It seems more like they're going to still kind of keep it as like a heelish group with...
Yeah, I don't like the heel versus heel dynamic, as the bottom line is, but if they really wanted to, they could make Lawler a babyface. I mean... they can make him a cool heel, a cool baby face easily, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Then we got Dirty Blondes and Pero versus Yuta, Jason Cade, and who's the other guy? Rick Gideon. You know, I'm looking at this, and I liked how they compared Yuta to Ricky Steamboat. I would like make Yuta my versatile guy. I like Yuta as a worker, and I think he has upside. And he's a guy on the card who doesn't have a big face nationally. Like, you know, he hasn't been shown up on a ton of Evolve shows. He hasn't shown up on NXT. So he's a fresh, you know, he's kind of like a fresh slate in a way. And I like him, but I like, you know, I'd bring like Kevin Koo into the group. Into the company and have like Yuta and Koo as a tag team, or maybe break Utah out eventually and maybe give him a run with the belt or the middleweight belt even. Because I think Yuta would do well working against like an MGF or even a Joey Janela if he was a heel in the company, going against that kind of like charismatic type of heel where you have him who was actually a pretty good baby face. What are your thoughts on Yuta in general, anyway?
I like Yuta. I was really, really, not super high, but I've been high on him and thought he was really good, thought he was good and had potential. But super impressed at the Commonwealth Cup. I think, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I confused, too, because I remember we were talking about something else, and I think I mixed up the Commonwealth Cup and the Dynamite Cup, and I haven't watched the Dynamite Cup, I don't think. But in the Commonwealth Cup, you'd have really impressed me coming out as the star and the underdog babyface of the whole thing on a guy I was already high on, so I saw even more potential. So, yeah, like, to me, I'm up for that. I think a Kevin Ku, Yuta run, like you said, tagging him first and then turning it into them breaking up into a feud is exciting for me, because I think that the Ku and Yuta actually could have some great matches. But,
I think they could have good matches, but I'd hold off on that feud just because I'd like to keep them, like, because it's such a cliche, you know, the feud with the tag team partners type of thing.
Right, right. Which, I mean, hey, if they're making the Steamboat references, you could do the... tag team breakup feud kind of thing, to play off of that history. So yeah, I mean, to me, big upside in Yuta, and I think a guy that they would be smart to use in pretty much in the way that you're saying. And to, like, you know, I don't hate DJZ, but like, I feel like in some ways, like, I look at Yuta as having a little bit just like more solid basics and like kind of doing a similar thing as DJZ right now.
I agree.
Yeah, so, and I don't necessarily get DJZ completely, but I do understand and, like, kind of appreciate there's something there. And people, you know, say that they really like him, which I can't argue with. So, so yeah, it's like, it's definitely, it would be an interesting kind of a thing to book.
What do you think of the tag match?
The tag match itself I thought went pretty well. Rhett Gideon, I was, thought he was familiar. I think I saw him in a match, like, once. I don't remember if he was a WWA 4 guy or what, but ever since kind of Fox took over WWA 4, I wasn't really paying attention if they even still post stuff on YouTube.
Right.
But yeah, didn't see much, really didn't see much from him or Cade, as most of the match to me was about Yuta. Obviously, there's something that they're looking at there. Good selling, obviously, from him. Great. I like the heel kind of... not even like overtly heel, which I think is part of the problem with the Dirty Blondes and the Stud Stable heel feeling, like I was talking about with them trying to go heel feud, is the Dirty Blondes, to me, they do like a lot, some, you know, tag team kind of tomfoolery, but it's more roughneck and less like underhanded cheating kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And stuff that comes across like a barroom brawler kind of guy. And I think wrestling right now, that style of wrestler is kind of over. It's like a brawler type of person. I mean, look at like PCO and stuff, like, people like that kind of stuff, the roughneck thing. Even the Revival, kind of, you could look at it as like the WWE version of it, to where like presenting him as a heel and everything still kind of, you know, gets over. So yeah, they were good. I mean, they're good at that, but I don't know how much of a fan I am on that and like how much of like actual heat it gets right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I feel like they need to put a little bit more heat on the Blondes, like let them actually cheat a little bit better, more and stuff.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, it seems like they only cheat in other people's matches to help them win, but they don't do, like, a lot of underhanded cheating in their matches. So
exactly.
Whatever. I mean, that's, you know, not even that big of a thing. But the match itself was good. I liked the heat and the stuff that they did. Like I said, like the Yuta finish. Decent spots from Cade. Gideon was, I mean, there and fine and kind of fulfilled his stuff, but no spark. But a decent opener, six-man. But some of the people in here, especially Yuta, Jason Cade somewhat, are guys who feel like they shouldn't be in opening six-mans at this point in this company, just because of, like, seemingly how much focus there's been behind them, but no, like, development.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously pushing a Cade-Yuta feud, and that's why I wouldn't do a Yuta. If I brought Ku in, I wouldn't be breaking him up, because we've just seen it. I thought this was a good solid tag work. I like the finish because it actually like pushes storyline further. I can see a lot of people, especially today's fans, hating the finish because it wasn't clean. But I'm fine with a finish that pushes the storyline and extends it or takes it in a direction. So I'm all fine with the way the finish played out. Then we get Barrington Hughes squash. You know, that's kind of all you can really do, huh?
I guess. I'm not sure. Like, it would be interesting to see if he can have, like, a match, but maybe he can't do anything else, or they're, like, training him.
Have you seen him anywhere before?
No, never. Like,
yeah, that's why I'm wondering, where is this guy come from?
I think, like I said, I think that maybe they're training him. I don't know. It'd be interesting to figure out where he came from. Might need to look that up, I guess.
And he doesn't scream like you look at him, like, money. He'll be money. You know, he looks... I don't see any money in them. Then we kind of get a recap of Janelle and MJF, huh?
Yeah, yeah, and just kind of showing everything.
Which
off.
Leads to Janelle versus MJF. Pretty much like a pretty much fun brawl. What did you think?
Yeah, fun brawl. I think I was a little, I guess, like, not pissed off, but a little annoyed at the Aria Blake kind of thing there. I'm not calling her a thing, but the angle of having her there when, like, everyone knows that Joey's the bad boy and he's got his bad girl, you know? It's like,
yeah.
It's a weird move, and it smacks to me of, like, people who they, you know, there's just certain people that they have, like, some kind of weird connections with from the scene, maybe, or the schools around or whatever, and they are just like trying to get him into positions or push them. Like Barrington Hughes might be a guy that's getting trained at like someone's school Court Bauer has a connection with or something, you know what I mean?
Aaron Fox's school.
Yeah, is that where he's from?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's no way he's from Aaron Fox's school. Because he would be doing like huge bumps and stuff by now.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be. That was the only thing that was annoying to me was that she was there, and like that on top of that, it just made me think like, you know, the interaction with MJF at the end, is that like a tease of an angle and she's just going to turn on Joey to, because I could be fine with them doing like mixed tags or intergender tags with all four of them if they bring
in
Penelope.
And the last whole thing was they pulled Riddle from the promotion because of his Evolve connections. It makes you wonder now that Janela had the belt, that is he not going to be available to him? You know?
Right, it's gonna turn out that it's not even, there's nothing going to come from this, and it was just pointless.
Yeah,
like a
which is just pointless
cooking.
Television.
Yeah, exactly, and that's kind of what makes the MLW stuff hard to watch, because even though the match is fine and good, the booking and everything around it and presentation makes you kind of realize, like, oh, this doesn't matter, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's funny, because I think I saw Janela have a match like either the day before this went up or the day after, and he was wrestling at this bar show out here that was part of a music festival that was actually just in a bar with no ring, one of those shows. Which I don't know if you've seen any of those, but
never have.
They are not great to watch on tape at all, and realistically, unless you like crowd brawling, they're fucking terrible live, because that's all you can do when there's no ring. You're just in the crowd. You just, by definition, You're crowd brawling, you know, like
Or you're mat wrestling.
I mean, I saw Filthy Tom there too, and all he did was crawl and brawl. He did like a flying triangle onto like a banister next to a pool table, and that was the extent of his grappling, really.
Who'd pay the money to do this? Jesus,
I know,
Christ.
Right? I know. It was just So, but Janela had personality and stood out and all that, and was a big time star in that setting. And it's like here, he's just having an okay match with MJF. So it shows like the amount of effort that he was putting into it, even if
and
like,
that
was it was
like both should be heels, too.
Right, that's true.
So that didn't work. Yeah, I mean, I think they need to I used to say this about Ring of Honor when I watched it a lot. It feels like they need to write a piece of paper down and write who's your heel and who's a babyface on the matchups. So the wrestlers are gonna remember what the fuck they are.
Right.
So tweening nowadays, and
well, that's why Russo
with
did
the
Aria that,
Blake stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. This show is really right now. I mean, it's geared towards a hardcore audience, so they know who Janela's woman is. So it's just like, it's like, yeah, we all know it's a work, but we also know he works with his girlfriend in a lot of other promotions, and so it just leaves a funny taste in your mouth.
Yeah, for sure.
What'd you think of the main event of Hager and Lawler?
I liked it. I was probably more excited for it than I needed to be, or should have been, realistically.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't expect there to be like really, really good brawling, and I honestly think that they are not brawling, grappling, and I honestly don't think that the crowd would have got into it, and they probably were told. I don't know if they were told. I don't know. Different companies, and I don't want to get another person upset who, like, we happen to review their TV show. I don't know if that's ever happened before, but I do know that there's some companies where, like, booking and promoting and all that isn't, like, thought of as part of the matches. But I could also see a booker kind of promoter person telling them not to do like an intricate, really big time grappling show off fest because this crowd, I don't think, would get into it. And we kind of seen that with Evolve. Like, I hate to say that, but Evolve and FIP and stuff, like all of WWN, like how much they run in Florida, you can kind of tell that the crowds never got into the like wrestle stuff. Like, they just, it was not a good scene in Florida. And so I think MLW is probably smart to be like, yeah, just don't even worry about it because it's not going to get over. And, you know, we're running similar type crowds. And honestly, MLW seems to be like, it draws better crowds than some of the WWN stuff I've seen.
And especially with the finish that they had planned for this, it didn't need to be intricate mat work. Cause I mean, the finish is going to be a schmoz. So, you know, so there really would be no reason to who one upped each other on the mat or what have you, with the finish being the stud stable, attacks and lays everyone out, you know?
Yeah. So what we got, I thought was good. It was honestly a good teaser. It made me less upset, like, that the match is the way that it is. When I think about the fact that then I think I heard later that that big show we were talking about that already had Joey Ryan and MJF, that that's where they did Hagar versus Gotch or Grimm or whatever they're, you know, Drago, whatever he's calling himself now. And I was just like, to me, the idea that you went to the Tom Lawler match as the build match to the Grimm match was like, oh, that's bullshit. Like, I was kind of upset.
It backwards.
Yeah, like you're booking, but the fact that this match did have the bullshit finish and you don't get a real satisfying end on it, then it does make sense that it would be like, you could still, you kind of do the interim match with Grimm and then go back to Lawler after that. And this was just like a teaser of starting the feud, you know?
Yeah, I know. I like this as a feud starter. And, you know, and then you're building to a bigger match on a big show type of thing, as opposed to just their television show. So that, as for that, it worked for me. And I mean, I liked a lot of the stuff. I thought it was a good match. I liked Hagar in control. I like with the leg. I like Hagar going out, dinging the arm, and he sells it big, and Lawler's after it. I mean, they did a lot of good stuff in here, but just enough to keep it interesting. And they did enough stuff that they laid out a template of what they could do later on, but do it with bigger and more intricate paintbrushing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I'm excited for that. I actually really like Lawler's look right now, and I noticed it when I saw him at that bar show also. He's developed the look more from when he first was back on wrestling. I'm kind of worried that he's getting to the point where he's got to be going back to UFC soon. I don't know anything that happened with his contract or anything like that. I don't know if maybe he's not at this point, because I thought he was supposed to already be back by now.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, so there's a possibility that he's just not going back to UFC, and he got that niched out contract thing like Josh Barnett has, where he can wrestle, or had, I guess, because Josh Barnett's off of a contract for UFC now. You know, or if it's like he actually got released or what, or if he's just actually going back soon. But his look, I'm interested, because I'm like, good look, seems to be committed to wrestling. He's doing fucking shitty bar shows where he's wrestling Brody King without a ring, which drew, like, there was a ton of fucking people at this show, because there was also some metal band or something playing that was a big deal to people. So yeah, it was, it's interesting to me to see what's going to go with him, because he could be a guy that they could turn, and that's kind of my point, is at the end of the match, with this being the feud starter, it felt like this could be the start of focusing on Lawler as the top ace of the company, and turning his group into a babyface group, which I don't think would be a terrible idea, because even though I did say that the Florida crowds don't like the wrestle, he can do it, but he also has shown to me he's got a hell of a lot of personality and can do, like, matches that are not just all grappling stuff, and he can actually wrestle and do like kind of variations on that so that it can still get over with bigger audiences.
Have you checked it out yet? I haven't looked at the Rock and Roll Express versus him and Alvarez on Powerbomb.
No, I have not watched that yet.
I haven't watched it yet either.
I haven't gotten to it. I plan to, actually. You know, it's my weekend right now, and we usually, this is a lot of times it sucks because I feel like I kick off my weekend by recording the show.
Right.
And my plan is to watch a bunch of stuff that weekend that I will then forget to talk about on the next week, you know?
Yeah, I wanted to watch that. I haven't, because we're watching the G1. I think it has something to do with it. But I did watch Kane Justice versus Kevin Koo on High Spots from Pro Wrestling Freedom. Have you seen that one?
No. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, watch it, man. Fucking awesome match. Those guys. It was like watching UWFI meet Southern Wrestling. And yeah, it was awesome. Just really great stuff. The mat work versus the Striker. I thought this was Kane's best match. I thought that was Koo and Kane's best match of the year so far that I've seen. But I mean, I haven't seen, like, you know, I've seen a lot of Kane stuff. And I've seen probably about, you know, 15 of Koo's matches. So I feel like I've seen a good sampling size from both guys. And I thought that was the best match they've done. Really good stuff. Nice. What do you think of the Lawler promo? I thought it was great. He got a lot of heat.
Yeah, you know? Man. Yeah, and like I said, I think it plays into what I said. Like, he could turn babyface in this heel, which would be, or in this angle, in this feud, which would be weird because the Stud Stable is, like, to me, I thought leaned more babyface.
Well, you know, yeah, you can go with Lawler, and you know, one of the complaints he's making is, yeah, he's the number one contender, but he's never had a title shot like all the other guys who've been number one contender. So right. And then they, and you know, and then they're giving low key stealing his title shot. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of different ways, you know, the promotion's fucking him, where you can still keep him his same character, but it could turn him like almost like a Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Of course, not as, you know, you're not gonna, you know, be Stone Cold, but do something in that vein.
Yeah, which, I mean, does play into kind of the tongue-in-cheek nature of him being a rebel also, and then, like, doing stuff with F4W, which is interesting, you know, because he still does that podcast, still just wrestled a match with Brian Alvarez, like, which I haven't been paying attention to anything from The Observer for months now, so I don't know if they still do the podcast regularly, but it does... It could work into that... into that angle with him being kind of the tweener character too, because he can have both sides kind of represented.
Yeah, but definitely watch that. Anyone out there, you guys haven't seen it, it's I forget the name of the show, but it's PWF from June, I think it was 22nd. It's on High Spot Network with Kane Justice versus Kevin Koo, man. Good wrestling. On that note, man, why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some NXT action. How's that?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. We're back with NXT, and it opens up with a memory, you know, condolences to, of the passing of Mr. Saito, really talented wrestler, great from work Japan. He made his niche in the United States as a former AWA World Champion, defeating Larry Zbysko. Had runs as a really good tag partner with Nick Bockwinkel in the WWF with Mr. Fuji. Had really great tag matches with him and Fuji versus Rick Martel and Tony Garea. Really underrated stuff that people don't really talk about because it came before, you know, the big boom and before the Jock and Rock, whatever connection, whatever the hell you want to call it. But just a talented guy, and he was great in the Southern Indies. Big opponent of Hulk Hogan's in the AWA. Great guy who a lot of today's audience probably have no idea who he is. Do you know anything much about Mr. Recycle?
Yeah, no, of course. And I've seen an amount of his matches, not like a bunch, but I've seen, right. You know, I've watched them. And I think that modern, like younger wrestlers and stuff, and modern wrestlers probably maybe know or have thought of, or maybe don't even know at all, because to me, I feel like it's kind of on the periphery. Is like you talked about a lot of his stuff in the AWA, and that connection made him like a Rangins guy. He was a Brad Rangins guy, and so he had a connection to Brock and all that. And there was that story, what, like 2 years ago, about Brock going and visiting him in Japan.
Yeah,
when they were in
about
Japan.
His health, yep.
Yeah, and people, I don't know if people understand that the connection there goes back through the AWA, Rangins, and that whole connection for Saito, and that he was a well-respected trainer, you know, and also a guy who, I mean, Rangins, I think, is known for being, like, pretty shooty for wrestling and training, and the training and the production that he did. So, you know, that just shows you that, you know, Saito was a lot better than I think he even got credit for as an overall wrestler, too. I mean, because his stuff always looked great, but when you think about him,
always
he's also a shooter.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I feel he'd, you know, if he was in his prime today, I think he'd be a big star in New Japan. He'd fill in the Ishii role and stuff like that, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh, I was thinking about him mixing it up with like the Strong
Suzuki.
Boys.
Yeah.
And like on the Indies and stuff too. I mean, like, because there's a lot of people who are wrestling almost tribute style to his style. I mean,
yeah.
You know, with the guys, the underneath guys, and like All Japan, BJW Strong, and stuff like that. Like, they're all kind of doing a knockoff version of that style. So him coming around as like a grumpy vet for that style would be amazing. Or him, like you said, in his prime, would be amazing still. So yeah, I mean, a guy whose presence, I think, or like whatever, like influence is not thought of just because of that. But like, yeah, the style that's really popular is based around what he did.
Yeah, what he did. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But hey, let's get into this proper, and we have my gal, Dakota Kai, versus Lacey Evans, and my gosh, Dakota Kai dragged a pretty good match out of Lacey Evans here. You know, Evans' biggest attribute is her size, and Kai does a great job really making, Evans look good here. Kai is really impressing me as a babyface, as her fire, and her comebacks. It was a good match, you know? Even with Evans going over, I really do think they need to rehabilitate Kai, or they're going to end up abusing her into nothingness. Because the gal can go. She's a good worker, good babyface, has good comeback, good fire, and Evans is big. And Kai sold for her, made her look good when she needed to, and made a good comeback on her, and then Evans' size took over and won the match. Good stuff. Really, shockingly good in a way. What did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it for the same. I mean, all the same stuff that you're saying, and I think agree with you completely that Kai. Weirdly, though, I'm like with it because she just came out of an angle with the whole storyline with Shayna and all of that we talked about, and how fucking ridiculous it ended with Cross. This felt like a match, like you said, like she probably shouldn't be losing just to put somebody over at this point, especially just randomly. But also, like, the way that she worked it and made it good, it was like by the end of it, I was like pretty much like, yeah, that felt like a match that she should have lost.
Yeah.
And just by the way that she told the story. So that's even more credit to her work, I think, is that she's able to work a match with someone who's not very good, use their size, exploit it properly, and have like show off yourself even a little bit, just rehabilitate yourself even some in the beginning, and then make it to by the end where like it was a lot of action. She like just really selfless of her, and she did a really good job helping to try to make Evans have a good match. And to me, it was actually a really good match. I was with you. It was like actually a good match from Evans, which I thought, like, you know, after Candace did that, I thought it was a major aberration. And then turn around and Kai does it, and I'm like, oh, okay, maybe they could be doing something with Evans eventually. She is kind of feeling like the worst thing in the company, wrestling-wise and gimmick and everything else, too. But I could still get in. I feel almost bad for saying it, but I could still possibly get into it if she keeps having decent matches with people who are insanely good.
Yeah, I think her size helps her because she's so much bigger, taller, and her physicality. But I think they need to find the right gimmick for her. I don't think what she's doing now is the right gimmick.
No.
It won't play here. I don't think it plays here well. I know it won't play up north very well. But her size is something that will put her out there, and it helps her. It really does.
The
visual really does help. They just really got to find the right coat of paint for her.
Right, and the explosive opening and knowing how to work with a bigger opponent, it just, I mean, we'll talk about it later on, but I'm not saying that Dakota Kai is at the same level, but it was another smart way to put together a match against a larger opponent that Tanahashi does during the G1 to have, like, a really good match. So you just go, like, oh, is Dakota Kai on the level of worker as Tanahashi? Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying she did the same thing. She was smart enough to do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Lacey Evans is on par with Bad Luck Fale.
yes, definitely.
And I'm assuming that's what you're talking about, because I like that match a lot. Then we get to the Ricochet interview. He wants Adam Cole. That's, you know, great. Cool. I could get it behind this. But you know what? It's hard. I'm not a big Cole guy. But Ricochet, to me, he's been money since he's been here. So, What do you think?
Yeah, Ricochet's been money for a while, and I think Ricochet has... I was talking about it the other day with someone. We were talking about Apollo Crews and how he had, like, something interesting happen to him on TV recently, which is not common, which I don't know anything about because I don't watch WWE at all. But
I have no idea what you're talking about either, so...
Yeah, and then talking about, like, how it was, like, the most interesting thing Apollo Crews has ever done in a wrestling ring or something like that, and I was just saying, like... oh, yeah, what about when Ricochet used to do flips around him or have good matches around him doing flips? And it was like I was just kind of joking around. But it's like, yeah, Ricochet, I mean, that's like the opposite version, but it just shows what Ricochet can do is that I think, like, Ricochet can carry a match with almost anyone. Like, no matter what they can, whatever they can do, he can work around it pretty well. And I think, like, oh, yeah, of course, with Adam Cole, he's going to make it work. Because Adam Cole, I think Adam Cole is a pretty good time, can be carried guy. Like, on top of being good on his own, like, I'm not saying that he's bad. Like, I'm just saying, like, he knows how to take advantage of his opponents to have, like, even better matches because they're really good. So, like, it's a form of carrying, you know? It's not like, oh, he's a fraud and he's being exposed. It's like, oh, you know, he's just taking advantage of a situation and making, like, having an even better match, which is smart of him.
And to be fair, I mean, with my shot that I did say at Cole earlier, he's been getting better as the year progresses in NXT. Because at first I thought he was actually bad on the roster, but now I think he's turned into a solid worker. Then we get a Street Profits vignette. I'll let you talk about this shit instead of me.
What? Why are they still doing this?
I know.
Are they reintroducing them again?
I mean, this is terrible. Did they debut a year ago? I mean, what?
It was longer than that. They debuted, and they're like, I guess they're re-debuting them again. I don't even fucking know. It's wild.
Playing one-on-one basketball, talking about TM61, which is a match I have no desire to see because I hate the Street Profits as baby faces. God, almighty. Pass. We get an EC3 interview, and he ends up running into freaking Kona Reeves. Are they trying to turn EC3 babyface? So you have Velveteen Dream walks out on him.
I know.
On the UK show, Conor Reeves bumps into him and they insult each other. Obviously, everyone hates Conor. No one likes Conor, but he has this. Conor Reeves is in good heat. His is go away heat, while EC3 had good heat. But it's clearly they're going to choose between the two. Who they're going to cheer for is going to be EC3 because they wouldn't want Conor near their television set. What do you think they're doing?
I guess, I mean, when you lay it out like that, it seems like that's where they're going, and it's kind of wild. It's also, I mean, it's both heels that are messing with him, and I don't know, maybe they could try to make him like he's a heel on the heels only or something. I don't, but he's still a bad guy to the people. I have no fucking clue what they're doing. It's all very, I guess, it just, the whole thing in TNA, I guess the reason why it worked in TNA is because, I think I said it before, it felt like it was not, like it didn't matter, and like, whatever, and he got over because it was like, he was the best thing on the show that sucked, but now like on here, he's like, I don't know, it's like, I think that they're already having a lot of trouble figuring out how to best use him, and
yeah, I mean, he's obviously a good talker, he's not a great worker, he needs angles and vignettes, and I don't think the angle is, other heel insulting him, or right. Tag partner who is a babyface, but we treat him as a heel walks out on. I mean,
yeah.
they're almost killing him. But luckily the dude can talk and he'll stay relevant and over because he has charisma and can talk.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And he's jacked.
Jacked.
So as long as he gets away with that, I honestly didn't think this would happen, but I think they'll just put him on the main roster and just, like, have him there soon.
They might, you know. He could be Bobby Roode, too.
Exactly.
Kind of Roode is just there, and he's not doing anything right now.
It makes sense in a lot of ways. I mean, he followed Roode anyways in TNA. I mean,
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean.
Well, that's the problem with a lot of the NXT is, like, I forget who I read this on Twitter from. Who did I read it from? God, I can't remember who it was. But it was saying how frustrating it is how a lot of these guys from NXT, their career highlights are NXT, where it should be a springboard to the WWF and become a bigger star. And that, for the most part, has not happened. There's only been a handful of guys who've become bigger since they've come up from NXT. And that's just sad. Then we get the breakup of or a recap of the Ciampa Black feud. Good. I can't wait for it next week. Get the match. So, what about you?
Yeah, excited for the match next week. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, good job building it. I'll tell you that. Then we had Ono, Sonny Ono, Cassius Ono.
It's his son.
Wash, just destroying the dude, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Just kills this guy, which is, I mean, good. He could use some credibility, but it was also, like, kind of nothing.
Yeah. Then we get Undisputed Era interview. They just come across as NWO knockoffs, and I like what they do in the interviews, but it's just, it wouldn't be so bad if they didn't have the NWO light music playing in the background, knockoff NWO music, while they're doing it. It just seems a little too, I'm hitting you over the head with it. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's definitely a bit too much, a bit jarring, the NWO, but like almost kind of campy NWO thing.
Yeah.
It's like Bullet Club is like, a bad knockoff of a movie, and then like Undisputed Era is like if they make a kid's version of a movie, you know, that's like,
yeah,
that's like the feeling there. So that comparison's not great to me personally.
Exactly. And NWO had some of the biggest draws of wrestling money in history with Hogan and Savage, and I mean, Nash and Hall didn't do too shabby while they were up there either. Then we get a War Raiders package. I thought this was well done. It was excellent and really made them a big deal. And I'll give NXT credit, man. They've done a damn good job of keeping War Machine or War Raiders away from the Undisputed Era. I think they've done a fantastic job. Because that's the feud that's on the horizon eventually. But I think they've done a great job of building War Raiders without hurting anybody else in the company, and just building up them vignettes and some squashes. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they've done a good job staying away from it so much that when you said it, I didn't think about it, and then I kind of like developed it in my brain as you continued talking. And like, yeah, obviously that'd be a good feud. All four guys in Undisputed Era have wrestled the guys in War Raiders in the past in different settings. So easy match probably to put together. It'll be good. It could deliver for in a big spot. So yeah, that seems like a smart feud to be building to, even for like a bigger show.
Exactly. Then we get the Velveteen Dream video package. I thought this was fucking awesome. What did you think?
I loved the package. I loved the way it was put together. The delivery, everything. And the one thing it made me question was like kind of thinking about like the comparison of something like this would be if it was just a little while ago, I guess, like when production levels weren't right where they're at now. And the idea that like, you know, delivering something like this would be like done in ring in the past. And like just that like you could kind of, I don't know, more buy into the idea that like the show is broken up by something like this, if it's like actually happening in the show, as opposed to like that he put the whole video together and like filmed all this stuff and everything and then they played it on the show, or that the show itself put it together. Like, what's the point of having it there? So yeah, it's like it's interesting to me to think like if you're able to have that kind of overlooked more and more as production just becomes so ubiquitous, and the show just becomes like able to feel like it's able to have stuff like that. Because this one worked, I thought, really well. I was with you. I really liked it. But just thinking about that it's like a little bit less organic, and like understanding why it would be in the thing to begin with.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and then that leads us into the ladies' match, the Nikki Cross, Candice LeRae, and Kairi Sane. I thought this segment was incredible, and with Shane on commentary. What did you make of the match and the whole segment, the whole package here?
Yeah, I thought that the Shayna, like you talked about on commentary, added a ton to the match. She's just
best
so on
wrestling, huh?
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah, she's so solid, just talking shit like and.
Feet propped up on the desk.
Yeah, just being dismissive. And then, meanwhile, the work inside the ring, I thought was... They did pretty well. I mean, very, you know, two-in, one-out formula, which is always going to happen. Really liked the kind of submission attempts repeatedly from Kairi Sane, especially on Candice, because just Candice, the way she ragdoll sells while also being, like, pretty limber and small, like... always looks just like she's getting wrecked in nasty submission holds. On top of that, Candice just, you know, flying around, cannonball to the floor, stuff like that. Some girls are definitely doing it, but definitely not a lot of girls were doing it on the big time stages as much. And, you know, I mean, you talk about like the dangerousness of even the pad, like outsides anymore. I mean, people seem to bump on them pretty big now in general. But you know, even think about it too, it's like it's probably not that bad at all to take that bump or any part of it. Probably in ring as well. I mean, it seems like the rings are softer than they used to be. Either way, that's like more digression into like the bumping styles and stuff that's not necessary for NXT before we even get into G1. The match itself, I thought all three girls played their roles well. Nikki Cross, I think for rehab, it was good to make her a little bit less goofy and a little bit more serious. But does still make you question what the fuck they're even doing with Nikki Cross, as she comes across like she should be on the main roster very soon. And I heard some people like not excited about Kai versus Shayna, as I think kind of where it should be going, because it's a rematch and people have seen it before and stuff. But to me, I'm kind of like, the match was good, so I'm fine with seeing it again. You know, I don't mind that they're going back to it. It'll be good again.
Exactly. I absolutely love this match and segment. I thought the timing here on like, a lot of the stuff in this match was incredible. again, the crowd chants are not original at all. Chanting all their names. But at least here, they're all baby faces. So at least that makes sense. And when we had it last week with Mustache Mountain and Undisputed Era, one's a heel, one's a face. So having back and forth chants to me, when one's a heel and one's a face, is ingenuous. And I'm hearing, and since we got it here, we got it there, I'm hearing Jeremy Borash is becoming a factor by getting crowd reactions on how he's going and working hard by starting up chants of names and stuff. So this just causes, just takes away a lot of the organicness. And
this happened in TNA before with Borash too.
Yep.
Yeah. He's had a history of doing that. I don't know if that's something that they were interested in. You know what I mean? Like NXT and them. But I mean, if he's doing it, then I guess.
Well, I think after hearing at the last WWF pay per view when the freaking crowd is making buzzer sounds and pretending it's the Royal Rumble during a 30-minute Iron Man.
I don't think I heard about that. I think I heard people mentioning about it, but I didn't like. I didn't really process it.
And not only, I mean,
what were they counting?
Okay, that's funny. But they did it the whole fucking match. It never stopped. So I can understand them wanting to manipulate the crowd as much as they can because, shit. I mean, I thought it was funny. I saw it on Twitter. Somebody, Johnny P. mentions, like, it was like, look, now Vince deserves what he gets. All he has is these, I can't remember the exact quote, but pretty much he's run off a lot of his original fan base, and now all he has is people who can't sit and watch his shows without trying to entertain themselves. And some guy goes, well, if I bought a ticket, you have the right to entertain yourself. And I'm like, to me, I go, Tim, have you ever been to a bad movie?
I believe so, yes.
Have you ever started singing and dancing at the movie or making farting noises or chanting CM Punk in a movie theater?
Well, the thing is, what's really funny is you bring this up, and I was having a conversation earlier about this, so it plays right into it. But no, you know what? I've never done that.
And you know what? Maybe the guy next to you or the female next to you or the person three rows from you, maybe they're enjoying the show. And maybe you making a goddamn a buzzer sound is distracting it from him. I can tell you, one time I went to a Ring of Honor show with Will, and he knew how excited I was to see AJ Styles for the first time, and he wouldn't let me enjoy it because he was too busy heckling Michael Elgin about his weight and causing other fans to heckle Michael Elgin instead of me.
Wait, was this an IWA show?
Huh?
I said, was this an IWA show?
No, this was a Ring of Honor show. It was a three-way between AJ Elgin and Adam Cole. So instead of me enjoying it, I get to freaking have Will heckling Michael Elgin the whole entire time.
Gotcha. I was going to say, because if it was the IWA shows, I could see picking on Elgin about his weight back then. He was a big boy. But by the time he was in ROH, I mean, you knew that he had body, like he had been chubby, but you didn't want to be mean to him. He looked good.
I think he was doing it more to piss me off. And I'm all for you booing and cheering who you want to. But to do stupid stuff at a wrestling show makes zero sense to me to entertain yourself. Then you should just walk out and go, if it's not entertaining, get up and leave. I mean, that's like the guy who can't be entertained in class, and you're trying to listen to the professor, and this jerk off is, making noises and, trying to do magic tricks or something. It's just, there's a time and a place for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? It's not all about you, and people should take that into account sometimes.
Right. And that's what I was going to say earlier. I was having a conversation with my wife, and we were talking about Paul Rubens, I'll say. And, the guy who played Pee Wee Herman. And it's like, he paid for his ticket, and he got in trouble for deciding to spend the time entertaining himself in the theater. You know, so I was talking about him earlier, but then it also plays into this. So it's like, that's your example. People who want to say, I paid my ticket, I'm allowed to entertain myself. Remember what he did and basically say that you're defending your right to do the same thing, just in there a different way.
Pee Wee Herman defense. Oh, man.
It's a Pee Wee Herman call to action is what it really
there
is.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh, man. Back to the match, though. I enjoyed the big moves there. I thought they progressed very nicely. And I absolutely love that finish, how she steals it. I thought that was brilliant. I gave it 4 stars. I was really into this. But everyone worked hard. I thought they all clicked well. And they did it without a natural heel, without a heel in it, which made it really impressive with 3 babyfaces doing it. Which, you know what? Let me take that back. I think it's easier to do it with 3 babyfaces than having 1 heel and 2 babyfaces. Because then the babyfaces come across like heels.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
And 2 heels kind of sometimes is too much. But, yeah, it worked here. I liked it.
Yeah, I think 2 heels can be definitely very overbearing.
Yeah.
And just having 2 babyfaces with one of them working a little bit heelish at times. And even flip-flopping it doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah.
So, like, you can kind of do... You could still get, like, heats and shines and stuff.
And I usually am a guy who thinks 3 ways are bad ideas anyway, wrestling-wise.
Realistically.
And it... But, you know, it worked here. They made it work.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I'm with you on the, you know, definite fantastic work. I mean, I don't rate TV matches regularly, but I'm probably, like, 3.75 to 4 star as well with you. I think, you know... just great stuff all around. Good match, good booking, good angles. I'm excited. I don't mind the rematch. The finish, like you said, fantastic. So, yeah, good all around.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to NXT show again, TakeOver, of course. On that note, why don't we take a break, and when we get back, we'll talk some G1. The first 5 nights.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
we're back, and we're back with the first five nights of the G1. We'll get into it all. Some general thoughts. This G1 really is like my least anticipated one in the last few years.
For sure.
Nothing new, nothing real exciting. Just because Okada just lost the belt doesn't make it more exciting. Just because it has new theme music, it doesn't make it any more exciting.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple years ago or last year, you had some of the, you know, some of the foreigners from All Japan. You had Cody working his first G1. You know, you're like seeing the escalation of Kenny, the rise of Kenny Omega. So there's like a lot of these interesting stories. You know, and everyone's, you know, talking about the Okada story. Oh, he's lost the first two matches or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's the same thing they did to Tanahashi. They heat him down, cool him down, because they want to get other people challenging Omega. Eventually, they'll heat him back up towards the end of the year, probably to get him ready for the Tokyo Dome show on the 4th. That's a trope of them. It's nothing new, nothing they haven't done before. But this year, there's like nothing interesting. I would have loved to see like a Jeff Cobb in the tournament or
fuck yeah,
you know, just yes. Something new. But
yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, Hangman Page isn't like exciting. I like Hangman Page. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's not like a. It doesn't up my interest in the G1. Like,
no,
because he's
had decent matches though.
Yeah, he's had some good ones, but yeah. But that's the thing. It's just decent, you know. Nothing blow me away. I'm just not invested with the talent. It actually feels really stale, and that's not something New Japan needs to feel right now when they're trying to make their biggest inroads into the United States and making a run there and stuff and getting new viewers to tune into the G1. It's just feels like they took a step back this year. What were your overall thoughts and thoughts about the G1 in that aspect?
I'm with like most of that in that like I agree with you on the amount of not like excited for the tournament. The kind of like feeling of samey, especially like an impressive samey. Adam Page. I mean, it sucks because, I mean, Zach was just last year. His first G1. Ibushi has not been in a lot of G1s, but I think not consecutive. Maybe this is consecutive for him for the first time.
Yeah, it is. He was there last year.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's ever been in 2 years in a row before. Yeah, I think he may have been in once before.
But see, if you gotta think about it, we're stretching for an exciting story.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's like, realistically, he's not very... like been in the G1 for a long time, so what the fuck. But they all are already, even Omega, like realistically in some ways Omega is like should be thought of as relatively fresh in a G1 setting, but because
he has new paint with the new belt, but no one gives a shit.
Yeah, and
I don't anyway,
and with so many guys that like have not really even challenged Omega or you know, or that Omega's even wrestled that much in New Japan, like I said, he's relatively fresh too. Still, like a lot of stuff feels super stale, but then or like on paper, but then matches are good, and like this year I thought opened up like relatively strong in some ways, and showed like guys doing focus, doing like limb work and arm work and storytelling and stuff in a way that was like interesting, where like it's not as much flashiness. And like I said, Paige had fine matches, like, you know, even though like on paper it was like not a big deal. Cobb I think would have been a great addition. Who the fuck knows what's going on with him and ROH, which now somehow ROH is even worse. I don't even know, like I saw someone post something saying that the guy who did the Dojo Pro thing was like, I don't know, some kind of alt-right or possibly racist, like KKK kind of guy. I may be misrepresenting that, but it's like, okay, and then they're connected to ROH, like, and ROH we already know is owned by Sinclair, so now you're getting to a level where you're like worried about like can you continue paying attention to ROH even. And then Paige is like having okay matches like in the G1, and it's just like, oh okay, like that's kind of the impetus of that you're like, how do I defend that? Which is like a weird subplot of the G1 that's not important to anybody at all. The matches, like I said, good, the booking's fine. Okada, I have been hearing people saying Okada is playing, he's a SoundCloud rapper now, which I find in some ways offensive, because it's essentially like making a joke that people with brain damage are the same as SoundCloud rappers, and that's offensive to people with brain damage. To like try to just to make up the reason why SoundCloud rappers are like that is because they're all have brain damage is also slightly like shitty to be saying. Because to me, Okada's gimmick is like 100% a CTE gimmick, and he's playing that like his brain got broken by the One Wing Angel or something. And yeah, to say that that makes him a SoundCloud rapper, I find a bit offensive. But that kind of thing, you talk about cooling him off and doing that, it's like, yeah, obviously that's what they always do. It's gonna be, he'll be fine. Okada's still gonna be a big deal. Eventually, and then you got like Naito having the same matches that are like good but don't care over and over again, and there's that's just like indicative of almost everybody on the shows.
Yeah, and then my biggest gripe so far, and I mean it's been a gripe against New Japan for years, and they have, and that the fact that people, a lot of people called, I mean Dave Meltzer says the 10 best workers in the world are from New Japan Wrestling. Then maybe someone could learn how to interfere. Without doing it in front of the fucking refs.
Well, I was, as you said that, it made me remember, like, I am kind of liking the disqualification storyline that they're doing in the tournament, because it is kind of interesting.
Finally. But they blew it off for most of it. It almost feels like a David Manny angle from World Class. And you know what? I didn't like it when Nick Patrick got involved in wrestling in WCW. I didn't like it when Danny Davis did it with the crooked ref in WWF. I don't like this troubleshooting ref who, you know, now he's out to get the fucking whatever, the Tonga Club or whatever the fuck they're called. You know, it just feels it's a problem because, okay, finally disqualified somebody, but you know what? He still shot the finger at him. You know, that's a David Manning thing from World Class. The third biggest baby face in the history of World Class. It's a means to get him over, but it doesn't help anything. Well, then again, then you see, doesn't matter. It's just that he finally DQ'd somebody. Well, here's Suzuki beating the living shit out of one ref, and they do nothing. They're brawling in the stands for way past 20 seconds. Evil is teeing off and hitting somebody with a chair when it's wrapped around his head right in front of the ref. Nothing happens. You know, like finally we get the one DQ that they built to. But you know what? All the other ones, they're just slugged off. And I think it's just terrible. It's so great workers. You can't tell me. At least freaking with the Tongas, at least they're doing it behind the ref's back for most of it. At least a lot of that, they're actually doing interference spots to set up interference. Most of them don't even take the casualty to try to work it and try to be creative. I mean, that's to me a sign of a great worker. So to me, none of them should be on the top 10 list, or they can't even do an interference spot without doing it in front of the fucking ref. Give me a break. Okay, off my tangent. I just think it cheapens New Japan's product big time on the way the way they treat the ref.
He's
supposed to be an authority figure. I mean, I did the same thing with CWF earlier in the year, and it's different because they're not. Hijacking the belt or whatever, but they're still breaking all the rules, and the refs are letting them. There's no Kevin Kelly saying, well, he's letting it go a little bit because how important the tournament is. We're not even getting that lip service this year. I think it's just bad on their part where they're allowing their talent to do that in front of the refs, and essentially, why even have a ref at this point?
I mean, I thought, actually, I mean, Kevin Kelly was kind of hitting the interference point, though, a little bit, like, in a way that was, like, I don't know, maybe kind of annoying, kind of bad, but he was, like, trying to stick to kayfabe in a weird way and talking, because he was saying stuff about, like, the referee knows that if he DQs this match and the crowd will eat him alive or something like that, like,
Suzuki. You're right, he did throw some of that in, but either way, I mean, it's some garbage.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
that's like saying, I guess excusing Suzuki. The New Japan fans are so bloodthirsty because we've seen Shibata crippled and Takahashi crippled that, it's okay for Suzuki to shoot his opponent because that's the only way you can top it, you know? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't do it for me. But let's get into it. Night one. Makabe versus Yoshihashi. What do you think?
I'm kind of, like, just wanting to pay attention to Yoshihashi a lot because I feel like he gets overlooked a lot. But, I mean, I don't know. I had a theory I was talking to someone about that he would have been way better off, like, in Dragon Gate for, like, his output and, like, the kind of matches he would have had and, like, the overness that he would have. Hell, he even, like, stole fucking, Shingo Takagi's finisher. So it's like, yeah, I think maybe he would fit in there. But he's just so nothing in New Japan. Makabe is, I mean, old and broken down, but, like, actually still... I mean, I guess probably not that broken down. Not even that old, really. But he's, like, tired and just, like, not bringing it that hard. But, like, he's super over, I guess, they say. He's, like, maybe the most famous guy in all of New Japan, which is weird. Like, but to mainstream audiences. So, whatever. I don't know. Culture's weird in that regard. The match is fine. I like the shoulder work and, like, the King Kong knee drop being put over as, like... I mean, they kind of showed that coming in, Yoshihashi's shoulder was taped up, but that, like, you open the first night with Makabe attacking it with the big knee drop, and that's what's going to set up him selling it for the rest of the tournament. I think it could help heat up Makabe. What I'm really saying is I think that they're building Makabe for a big title defense against Kenny Omega coming soon, and that he's going to win the G1 the way that they're building it. No, it's just like, you know, it's just there. Whatever. I think I'd give it, like, 2.25 star.
I went 3.25. And, you know, this is the thing about the G1. I'm past Makabe at this point. Yoshihashi, he had the last 2 years opportunity to move up because of people who were, like, injured, like Homa. Shibata, he's been in the opportunity. We know where he can carry his end of a match. But you know what? He's kind of, like, in that Goto range where I just don't give a shit about him anymore. It's hard to get invested in one of his matches. And here, this wasn't even a bad one. It was just two guys who were just, to me, are cold, in my opinion. Which leads us to Fale versus Adam Page. And, you know, I didn't like this match. I gave it 1.5 stars. Brawling, you know, he got some brawling. And then you finally see Page take Fale down. And then see Tonga getting interfered in it. It felt cold. I mean, Folly's not a good worker, so and Paige is a good worker, but he's not a super worker where I think he can pull a great match out of Folly. And here it was kind of a stinker. And I think he might have had a little G1 nerves in him too, Paige, this match. What did you think, man?
I just gave it 2 star, and I mean. I feel like I'm always slightly higher on Fale than most people, really. I don't know what there is. I don't know what it is, but I forgive him a little bit just because I like a nice big man, and he does a good job as a big man sometimes, even if, like, here he didn't really. I just have, like, a more positive feeling of him, I think, just for that. But Paige, the interesting thing is Paige. I mean, coming in this, because you mentioned, like, he's having okay matches. Yeah, like, he's bringing it. He feels like kind of an in-between of Adam Cole and Kenny Omega, and you even hear them talking about... I hear people talking about him in terms of Kenny Omega now, which is interesting. I think he's tightened up his style in a lot of ways that I appreciate more, to where it does... it does actually kind of reflect Kenny Omega a little bit more in the style, which might be that New Japan pressure that's kind of going on, where I was, like, talking about this recently that I feel like I'm completely burnt out on... Or I felt like I was completely burnt out on Omega or Okada matches, and it turns out really it's, like, it's still those matches, but just with other guys now, and it's just New Japan matches, which I hate to even think of as, like, a promotion having a house style, especially a promotion with so many different guys, different who have different backgrounds and wrestle completely different, but they're all having, like, similar style matches. Like, the fact that he's modeling himself clearly a little bit more after Kenny, after the match he even gets the endorsement from Kenny Omega specifically holding up his hand. There is that kind of anointment there. But it's working too. Like, I think that for me, I like that he's tightened in his kind of showing off of athleticism and then mix of power in a way that, like, they don't kind of make each other look ridiculous. Which I think that some of the stuff he was doing before, you know, sometimes doing a little bit too many, trying to do too many intricate flying stuff as a bigger guy just exposes you and makes, like, your bigger guy fighting stuff not look as good or come across as coming from a credible place. So yeah, I think that that's it's a strong showing from Paige here. Fale is Fale, and like the interference stuff and the disqualification being the kind of story going forward is interesting, because when this disqualification happened, I did not expect it to like develop into something more.
What do you think of Evil and Elgin?
You know, Brock Yonke, Bronk Hates Wrestling, I've mentioned it before, friends with him and stuff, on his blog he's been doing his reviews of the G1, he just puts fuck Mike Elgin and doesn't review anything, which I give him big time credit for that. I feel like, unfortunately, because there's so many politically shitty people involved in wrestling and the history of wrestling and stuff, that like if we start taking a stance, I don't know where to stop. I agree with the sentiment.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with the sentiment.
You have to
on
quit watching wrestling, honestly.
Exactly. So while I stand in solidarity and agree with the statement of fuck Mike Elgin, because the guy comes across like a real piece of shit, and the stuff that he did, that we know he did, even like is really fucking shitty, and then the stuff that's like alleged obviously is worse, but it's like, God, he's just like, you know, whatever. But his matches are pretty good, and if I say like I'm just not going to review his matches, then I think it opens up the door for not reviewing a lot of matches. So I liked this. I thought that Elgin looks really good. He's trimmed up. He's
probably because he doesn't have as many bookings to go to.
Yeah, so he's spending a lot more time in the gym. Which I don't. I get that. I'm feeling the same way as I've been trying to work out, and I've been feeling more and more this drive to go to the gym more.
That or maybe he feared Cobb was going to take his spot.
That's another very reasonable expectation that he could have been having. Which, hey, I mean, I also live in fear of Jeff Cobb taking my spot someday, because he could if he wanted to. So I'm with Elgin on both fronts. I get gym addiction and being afraid of Jeff Cobb. So yeah, the action was stiff. I always, whenever I see Evil now, it's really hard for me, because seeing him in person, he was so fucking short. And then, but then, like, knowing that, and then seeing him next to Elgin, and then being like, oh, they're pretty much the same size, I'm just like, is Elgin not that big, or is Ishii just really good at wrestling huge? And then I think about, like, I've met Elgin, and he was not as small as Evil. Like, no, not even close. So, I just think...
Elgin, I think, is about a good 5'11", 5'10".
Right. So, yeah, like...
Evil, I think, is like 5'8".
Yeah, and so, you know, Evil is able to wrestle in a way that you don't notice the height difference, the size difference, even all of that, to where it's believable and snug. And, yeah, I wish Elgin wouldn't do some stuff, but he's pared down his stuff pretty well to the point where, like, he's having decent matches. I gave it 2.5 stars. Thought it was fine. What did you think of the match overall?
Well, I liked it a lot more than you. I gave it 4.25.
Okay.
I loved all of the stuff. I loved the... I love the banging. I like the Big Mike. You see him climbing the post, and Evil after you know, Michael Elgin hits the post, and Evil like after the arm. Then again, I hate the weapon usage. Just work the arm. I don't need you hitting Michael Elgin with a chair. You know, I mean, I that's not to me. To me, it doesn't interest me at all. I'd rather you pick them up, hammerlock, slam. Okay, how about that? Oh, hey, how about wrapping it around the freaking ring post? Okay, I can buy that. I don't need to see you hit him with a chair. Get over it. At least here he distracted the ref, so he did it behind the ref's back. Didn't see it. Digging Evil's heat here. Very focused. Big suplex by Elgin, looking for some separation. I enjoyed both guys' strikes and stuff here, and their cutoffs. Elgin selling the damaged limb was very well. And hell, you even see Elgin in his new slim down frame doing a tope, and doing another wrinkle into it. Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I'm a big meat and potatoes type of guy, and they gave it to me here.
Yeah, I think the chair. I like the chair attack and the arm work. I thought I actually kind of liked. I mean, I get not liking the chair attack for the reason you said, but I liked it for being on the arm and then the focus on the arm.
Yeah, I didn't. The other thing I didn't take away from the match from it. It was just not a choice I would make, but it made sense in the story they were telling. So I mean, I just because I a lot of times just because I don't like something doesn't mean I'm going to take it away from the match because it made perfect sense in the concept. I'm just so kind of desensitized with weapon shots where they don't mean a whole hell of a lot to me. So I find it more compelling to do this, and this. But it didn't take away from the story.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I may have, you know, I might be punitive still on Elgin's match ratings in general. But you know, you're gonna have to accept that, everyone. It's just.
Well, yeah, I mean, no offense. Clearly, you are. You made the statement ahead of time. I mean. So it's kind of, you know, you can say, I mean, and not just you, anyone in general can say, I'm, when you have a you're talking about something and, you know, you're kind of foreshadowing, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway. Well, you end up, you know, it's still in the back of your mind when you're doing it. It's called human, being a human. Minoru Suzuki versus Tanahashi. I like this. Love Suzuki's barrage early on. Low level drop kick by Suzuki, and he's after the limb, after the leg. That heel hook by Suzuki looked freaking nasty. Suzuki's just torching him, and the crowd is stunned right now because Suzuki is all over Tanahashi, white on rice. Compared to the MMA stuff, really good stuff. Stand up, and Suzuki begins to just break him down. Tanahashi hits a desperation dragon screw. The comeback with Tanahashi, then misses the senshon, and Suzuki is on him again. Rope break. Some great flash pins by Tanahashi. Suzuki is just a force in nature. Tanahashi makes a comeback. Could have been a little better, but man, I thought it was really good stuff. 4 stars for me. What about you?
Yeah, I was also quite high on this one. I thought that the match structure to me reminded me of the Suzuki Okada defense from last year, but just showed the Tanahashi's skill, like, and selling and everything to make it a lot better. Like, the legwork in the beginning I was just more into, even though that heel hook that you talked about being insanely nasty, it also, like, it's always very hard for me with a heel hook because of when it looks that good and you think about it in MMA terms and like it even being like so dangerous that it's illegal, it does make it hard for me to buy anyone sitting in one that looks that good for that long ever. Right. So it's like I kind of wish they would drop it, but their focus and their like commitment to technique, there's certain guys who do it, and it's guys like Suzuki, Fish, Kyle. Like, that's why I think Kyle and fucking Fish would have been such a good fit in Suzuki-gun, and I always said that. But like those guys who do tend to be the only guys I ever see doing heel hooks. Kushida does them from time to time, actually, too. But like, actually set that shit in where you can, like, clearly see it's a heel hook. Those guys always have that kind of... that commitment to authenticity that you're, like... it also kind of hurts kayfabe in a way, or, like, breaks kayfabe in a way by trying to be too authentic. Combined with the selling from Tanahashi makes the match just really, really stand out. Great action from both guys. Great selling. Great back and forth. I really, really like Suzuki in here, just being aggressive, and I really like Suzuki tossing fucking Desperado afterwards, stumbling to the back, he's pissed off that he got hurt, and, I think both guys are just so good at their characters, so good at kind of bringing the drama and the passion to the match, like, that just really delivers. I give it 3¾ star, more stuff from Brock in it, just from talking to him and kind of seeing his reactions, like the kind of the praise, which I would assume goes around, you know, that's like the problem with that is I don't even see what people are really saying half the time, but like that Tanahashi is still so good in the G1 at this point, you know, is pretty impressive, and like Brock is even saying like best guy in the G1 up until like I think it was like night 3 or night 4, Which is like interesting because he's not like, you know, he's not going all out like a lot of the guys are in the main events.
That's the one thing he has going for him is, I mean, I've seen him like, you know, when Mania Week, he mailed it in everywhere, right? Yeah. We've seen him mail it in on Ring of Honor shows. We've seen him anytime. But when the G1 does, the one thing, though, is you can't ever take away from him. The dude has good psychology and can sell. You know, it's like, it's hard for him to have bad matches when he's trying, you know, when he's not mailing it in, because he has good match psychology and can sell. And so we always will always have those things going for him. And not only can he sell, but the crowd loves him and gives a shit, generally gives a shit about him. So they're always going to be into his matches when he's selling or when he's making a comeback. So he has all that built into him. And I agree. I think he's having the best G1 right now because of just, which is funny, is a lot of the fans of New Japan are into the flash of substance, right? And it's more about, here it's just about knowing how to work as opposed to doing a cool fucking move.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And you know what? Work will always go over at a tournament more than flashy moves, because you get, again, desensitized to the flashy moves when you see him over and over again. Then see it third time in a row. See that V-trigger for the fourth time in a row. Kind of loses his luster.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, what do you think of Okada and Jay White?
Again, I dig the Okada CTE gimmick. Messing around in the beginning, just kind of playing off of that. But I mean, I kind of find it insane that they have this be the main event. I get that Okada is still over, but with the storyline that they're doing, it's weird to have Okada in the main event to me. I kind of
Think it's because they wanted it in the main event. Will you remember it? That he lost a main event because I think that is part of the story.
It's very likely that that's part of the story, but it's like, yeah.
And it's hard. And the bottom line is the crowd still doesn't realize this is different Okada. This is Okada who they're going to cheer, or it's their guy. And if you put him in the third match or something, you fear that you might burn the crowd out and you have the last two matches dead.
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, that is a good point, and it is just kind of that he's at that level. But I think that that affects his storyline because it does make it feel less organic, because you don't, you know, it just doesn't feel like the crowd buys him as this goofy, not the same guy anymore. Yet they don't care. He's still a big star. So like, you know,
right?
It just, yeah, it hurts to me. It hurts the angle a little bit. But the match itself, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of digging Jay White here. I think he did a pretty good job as a heel here. But the, you know, again, the stuff with the, you know, chairs and stuff on the outside and all that. I don't know. They're just kind of repeatedly doing more bullshit with the refs, and you know, especially with Jay White knocking the ref over. And you know, this is just the start of it. So yeah, it's like, I'm kind of liking his work style, but I'm hating that angle that's playing into his matches, with a lot of ref bumps and stuff. I mean, there's two in this match, basically, back-to-back. So it's like, just to think about that. So, yeah, just, you know, him getting the win over Okada feels like it's kind of supposed to be a shocker, too, I guess, especially on the first night. And I think it did work, because it did make me feel like Jay White is going to be important in the tournament, even if it didn't feel like it should have been the main event of the match, I guess would be my overall takeaway. I gave it 2¾ star. And I thought it was like pretty good, but that kind of stuff hurt it for me, the kind of storyline thing.
Yeah, when I went 3.5, I'm not really seeing Okada when he's in the ring being completely different very much at all. Still going after the neck, still trying to set up the Rainmaker. Some hard hitting action here. I like White working the back. I like the Muda Lock by White focusing on the back. Okada trying to soften up the neck. White's charges in, and we get this ref bump. A little long, and the finish was completely flat. I give it 3.5. I liked it more than you, but, you know. But it still felt the same old talk, Okada, just with different hair color.
Yeah.
That's about it. Night two, we open up with Ishii versus Yano. I thought this was just a fun bout. Fun little banger, 2.5. Yano is coming to play. Tournament-wise, I'm not saying he's having like this blowaway tournament but for a guy who has no reputation but being a goof, I thought it was real enjoyable. What do you think?
When it was getting started and all that, I wondered if Yano was just waiting for Shibata to be alive before doing a parody match of that G1 match versus Ishii as a joke. Because that was kind of the feeling I was having, but then it turned into that's kind of the storyline of Yano for the whole tournament, which is like I'm into. I actually am here for it so far. With Yano being kind of more serious in this tournament, and that's the joke of the tournament for him, is that he's gotten to the point of being so much a joke that him doing any wrestling is funny, which is like kind of, I don't know, sublime territory when it comes to a stupid-ass comedy gimmick. Like, and then especially when you can back it up. I mean, that's the place that he's in that's in a good spot, is that he's a, you know, everyone knows he's a former shooter that was, like, high-level performing. Everybody knows that he can wrestle. So when he just does, like, actually brings it, he can actually have a match. And that's what he did here, kind of, for, like, parts of it. Then the stuff with Ishii. And then he continues to do it throughout the tournament. And, yeah, I'm enjoying it quite a bit. The match itself, it did. I liked the finish, playing off of, you know, Ishii kind of doing Yano's shtick to win. But, I mean, I would have liked maybe a little bit more of Ishii kind of stooging a little bit to be like more like Yano, because a lot of people are putting it over like he teased that out the whole match, and he really didn't. I mean, the rest of the match he really kind of just worked Ishii style, and it was just the finish itself that played off of the idea that he was trying to mimic and play Yano's game. Did you give it a star rating?
Yeah, I give it 2.5.
Okay, yeah, I'd probably give it 2.75. Fun stuff. All right.
What do you think of Juice Robinson versus Tama Tonga?
I liked the commentary actually really well for the way that they talked about these guys being so alike, and presenting them in a way that kind of played off of that, that I thought helped for me for the match a bit, is like to feel a little bit more like two bulls butting heads who are like, yeah, really in the same position in a lot of ways, one heel, one face, which is a nice dynamic to have. When you're kind of doing that storyline, because you've seen it in the past where they try to do like people who are like kind of on their way up feuding with each other intentionally in a feud to like try to make them both bigger stars in the end, and do it with like two baby faces and stuff like that, where they just kind of like they just kind of butt heads every now and then, is I don't think works as well as doing it with the actual heels. And these guys are both pretty good heels. The stuff with the cast on the hand of Juice was interesting. They're talking about it's coming off in a couple of days, which is, it's weird to think about. You know, I'm trying to think about like people who cancel off of the tour because of injuries and stuff. Weird kind of mess up on a brain buster that ends up folding weirdly by Juice. That kind of, I'm not going to like say Juice is like dangerous and actively bad or anything like at wrestling mechanics, but he's had a couple sloppy little spots like that throughout the tournament, which could actually also come from the real injury on his hand or whatever, but it has been happening, and it's just like, oh, you know, like concerning about like just how smooth he is, because he is getting over. It's like, oh god, is he pretty good and getting over, but also like a little bit sloppy now that he's over because he's not focusing and working as hard? Is it actually just that his hand is hurt? And then it's like, oh well, is his hand hurt because he's injury prone? So it's like, it does make you worry that they're not going to get behind him as strongly because of that moving forward. But in this match, I think you didn't really see it that too much. Just like I said, the that folded brainbuster kind of thing that happens. Finish is good. I actually am kind of liking Tama Tonga. I've heard a bit of scuttlebutt of like, who could give a fuck about Tama Tonga? But I've always kind of liked him a little bit. I think he's got some swagger. It's difficult because of, I guess, like wrestling being so monoculturistic sometimes that I think American or Western audiences, it's really going to be tough for them to like take a Tongan guy character as like serious as like really cool like that. But it's like kind of the Usos thing. It took a while for that to get over too, to be like, oh, he's like kind of a street-ish guy, but also like an athlete and everything else. So I'm kind of liking him developing that a little bit more here. I hope it can get over because he seems like a hard worker and he does a good job here. I give this match 3 stars.
You like it a little bit more than me. I went 2.5. Juice is one of my favorite baby faces in wrestling. Very methodical here. The pacing almost feels like we're getting a draw. That's how slow and methodical they were working earlier. Love Tonga Conga's attempt to murder Juice over there on the apron. I liked how he set up Tonga Loa interfering. Juice with some key, with some Ricky Steamboat Loa arm drags early on. You see Juice selling the hand at times. But, man, it just felt like... it never got going into the next gear. It just felt like they were floating for a disqualification or a time limit draw. Yeah, it just never felt like they popped it and rocked it. Then we got Sonata versus Goto. I'm sorry. Did I ask you what you thought? Oh, yeah, you already did. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think of Sonata? Oh, let me go. Sonata Goto. I gave 3 stars. We got some fighting on the floor. Sonata has a pep in the step here. I thought it was a fun finish, fun match, but I felt it got too long to get going, and I thought the finishing run was pretty good. I gave it 3 stars. What were your thoughts?
It felt worrisome that it's a little bit too early in the tournament to have a match that feels like so filler and nothing. I think also part of it is talking about the block, because I think this block has all the champions or something, and the A block doesn't have any champions. Is that the thing? So it might say something to the effect about that like the champion sides are, I don't know, the matches are more protected and don't have as much like real sense of anything's gonna happen, and it's like either the champion's gonna win or the other guy's gonna win and challenge them later, and you already kind of predict and know that. But yeah, it's like, so there's no drama. It doesn't feel like any real drama because it'll be like, oh sure, if Sonata wins, he'll get a title defense, but it won't matter, you know, and like, or he'll get a title shot or whatever, and it won't matter. Sonata, like you said, I thought Sonata did work a little bit better, but he does need to do something about his look. I mean, the hair is ridiculous, and I do not endorse bleaching or coloring any facial hair ever. It looks weird almost 100% of the time, and it's dangerous as fuck. Tommaso Ciampa stopped doing it, and now he's the best wrestler he's one of the best wrestlers on TV. So keep that in mind also. If you're ever thinking about bleaching any of your facial hair, it could keep you from being in the WWE, basically. The match itself, 2.75 star. Good action. Good all-around action, but did feel a little bit like too early to not give a shit about matches that are happening in the G1.
Then you got the exact opposite here with Zach and Ibushi. You did give a shit immediately. Well, what did you think of this match?
These guys, I mean, fuck. They've had a couple matches now, and they clearly have something there that can be played around with. It's funny because Ibushi, I don't know. I don't know what goes on in Ibushi's head, and that's kind of, you know, the rap on him is that he's out of his fucking mind or whatever, but also, like, extremely talented, and then also, like, possibly it's a show, and, like, he's not as flighty and weird as he seems, you know, and all that kind of stuff that there's... going on with the guy. And then he can, like, he can do stuff. He's, like, actually a really good athlete. You know, there's the stories about the kickboxing stuff where it's, like, he was going to miss a show that was, like, was it actually during the Tokyo Dome show, the July 4th show, Wrestle Kingdom? It was, like, around the same time he was going to do a kickboxing show instead or something. So I don't even know if that's correct. It might have been Peter Pan or something. Either way. So, like, there is something there with that, but he's also, like, insanely athletic. And he's, like, mixed in some more, like, shooter stuff into his matches, but just doing it more with the striking base. He's just a little bit of grappling here and there. But, yeah, Zach on the arm, Zach on the attack the whole way through. Ibushi being able to show off some flying in between as Zach just continues to punish him. Ibushi selling is always, I think, maybe he's just underrated to me and everyone else knows how great his selling is all the time, but I just overlook it. But yeah, here selling and even facial selling phenomenal as he's writhing in pain, which is becoming a big part of Zach's act, honestly. And it's weird to say that because it's the other guy. It's like a big part of Zach's act is having matches where he tortures people who sell well. So like he needs a good seller for it to be a really good match sometimes. And so, you know, when you do get them in these settings, it does help quite a bit. The way Zach can just roll all around him and, like, you know, go from limb to limb to limb and tearing him apart and really doing it and getting it over and you know, really showing off that the British style in a way that's updated and more believable than what people are used to, because there's, like, a
good... Yeah, the crowd seemed, like, awed by Zach's submission work here.
Right, and you forget that, you know, like, the British have, like, some zany guys, but, like, the tradition of the British in Japan is, you know, pretty fucking solid when you got, like, Rollerball Rocco,
Marty Jones,
Billy Robinson, guys who spent time over there, and then you even talk about modern, like, Regal, what the fuck, Squire, you know, Dave Taylor, even Doug Taylor, you know, guys... Doug Williams, I mean, guys who have, like, spent time that are British. Nigel, even, is, like, probably the last bit of that. So there is a history in Japan that British guys are fucking badass. So Zach is able to kind of use that, even though in America maybe he doesn't have the same cachet because his look doesn't work. It's, like, the style that British guys are thought of having in Japan, you don't necessarily have to have that look. You just have to be able to pull it off, which that's what he's able to deliver on for sure, is being able to pull the stuff off so it looks good. Great action. Love the slapfest stuff at the end. I do like time to time when Zach is, like, you know, fight strong style Zach. He's going to, like, get into a little bit of brawling. I don't like when it's too big of a focus, but a little bit here with Ibushi makes sense. Yeah, I gave the match 3 3/4 star. Actually, no, you know what? I gave it 4 stars. I'm sorry.
I went 4.5. I liked Zach taking it to the mat and Ibushi using the strikes. That heel hook counter to the top rope moonsault was freaking amazing. Never saw that coming. I love Zach destroying the leg. Crowd was just again, like I said earlier, was awed by Zack Sabre Jr.'s submission work. Ibushi sold all the stuff really well. I thought it was a great match. I give it 4.5. So then we got Naito Omega. I want to say I think Kevin Kelly sounds bush league when he's talking about star ratings about the second biggest promotion in the world. Say that I can understand people doing it on the indies because you want to sell some DVDs to the hardcores at home. But you know what? And when you're the second biggest promotion in the world, you shouldn't be talking about star ratings. It should be storyline round. It should be storyline driven. That's what you should be focusing on. That's my opinion. I thought the pantomime stuff early on was really great. I really enjoyed it. I liked the floor apron spot blowing up in Kenny's face. I enjoyed that. A lot of action, a lot of big moves. I think V-Trigger better be a finish at one point in the tournament. both guys destroying each other's necks. Crowd is going nuts. 100% behind Naito here down the finish. Good stuff. They told a story, both after the neck, but it was big move after big move. So it's something that appeals. It's a match that appeals, can appeal to a lot of people, to the guys who like storytelling, to guys who like big moves. So it really, I think it's something that a lot of people could like. I give it 4.25. They've had better matches in the past, but I thought this was well done. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of, or seen, read, whatever, a lot of grumblings about the idea that, like, because it wasn't their best match, is that fair to, like, punitive to this match? But I'm like, I don't know if that's really what the punitive side of it is. Like, for me, when I do something like that, I'm just, like, saying, like, you know, this match wasn't as good as it could have been based on what they've actually done. I'm, like, actually basing that on the match itself, though, like, what they did there. It's just, like, it makes it more of a letdown when you're like, oh, you know that they could be a little bit better. But that said, like, they're good here. So, like, that's a weird... Not a weird take to have. I get the take, but it's like a weird...
I think part of the take is that Meltzer gave their work, 5 stars before, and this got 5 stars also. So,
gotcha.
In that sense, I think that's where some of the... our friend Charles from Pro Wrestling Only, I think, said it best on Twitter. It's like, you know, the 89 Steamboat Flair series is considered legendary, 5-star matches. But they had a really good one in 94, but it wasn't as good as their stuff from... 89, but Dave didn't give that 5 stars. He gave it 4.5, you know. I'm surprised Dave... it's because, you know, he's a mark. He can't even alter it. It's going to be 5 stars, so there we go. Go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. Good stuff, though. I liked the neck work. The selling Naito matches, like, to me, they have this weird opposite effect, or like opposite of their intent of what they're meant to be, which is like exciting. What I'm trying to like fancily say is that they're supposed to be exciting and interesting, and to me they just are samey and boring because he does the same kind of finishes over and over again with all the big kickouts and all the big spots.
You feel the same thing with Okada though?
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like Okada.
I think Naito is like Okada light, honestly.
Yeah, I think that they're turning him into that. I think that there's a good chance that means he's winning the title soon and going on a, not a lengthy run, but like a moderate length run. So it'd be a good, it's, you know, that's a good way to start it, I guess, is him getting used to working Okada-style matches more and more. He's already been like one of the most over guys there for a while already, and I don't know how long.
Over, but they both use the same psychology where they're both softening up the neck. I mean, Naito's is for Tranquillo. Wherever the hell you pronounce it, and Okada's is for the Rainmaker, so they're both targeting the neck throughout the matches, and a lot of kickouts, a lot of token spots, so a lot of the matches feel samey between both of them.
Yeah, and you know, Omega does a lot of the same tropes repeatedly, and like on top of that, like he's like kind of working in cells and counters, like. You know, the You Can't Escape gets countered so many times now, and it's like a big thing. It's like part of his matches, and then he'll just do it normally. So it's like kind of trading it back and forth. So weird there. And I don't know. I mean, people are shitting on Omega being not as good now that he has the title, I guess. I don't know if that's the case or not, realistically, based on just this match, just the matches so far in the G1. But, you know, I mean, some of the stuff that they're saying is also stuff that I've kind of been saying, too. Like, the, you know, spammy V-trigger stuff, all that stuff. Still a good match, though. I gave it 4 stars. Really enjoyed it. Great guys. Both guys are really fucking good together as well, which is nice. There's a match later on that people are, to me, I'm like, how are you not talking about, when you talk about, like, past history being, like, this weird kind of, like, thing to think about. There's another match later on where I'm like, that's where you really want to, like, talk about, like, this match isn't as good as their other match, and what the fuck, you know? But I guess it's just because everyone's focusing on Dave's star ratings.
That's true. That's become an obsession.
Which is probably why Kevin Kelly is talking about them, which, again, I agree with you, he should not be, which is, you know, whatever.
Yes, Bush League. I hate that, too. They refer to Omega as what are they calling him?
I'm not sure. What you're talking about? Are you talking about the?
Maybe it's the star making machine or the star match.
Are they giving him some kind of star match fucking gimmick or nickname? I didn't know that.
really lame.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's fucking terrible. I saw this stupid thing, the Starkeeper, the Star-Lord or something really fucking dumb and nerdy. It was on Being the Elite, where he was reading the psychology book or whatever. It was some bit that he was doing with the Young Bucks to, like, make off of, like, that's how he's able to get those star ratings, is because he read that book or whatever. Which was funny because, like more of on a meta level, that it was, like, cheesy and fucking terrible. But yeah. Just a little bit over the top, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not a Being the Elite watcher, so... never saw it. Night 3. It goes with Elgin and Paige. Opens up. I thought this was good. I like him. I like Elgin with a toupee. I like Paige's knees white while Elgin had him in the vertical. I thought that was really cool. I hear 2 and 3/4. So what do you think of it?
Yeah, I thought that these guys did a really good job of bringing together their styles that worked well, which I was very concerned with, because even just a little while ago, I think both of them would have, like, overlooked what made the match special to, like, kind of in spite of itself to try to make it better, which is, like, what makes this matchup work is that Paige is, like, faster, but he can do some power stuff, and Elgin is stronger, but he also can do some flying stuff. And in the past, they would have kind of probably overplayed that hand and had both guys wrestle against their type to, like, show that off more, instead of using it in this match to kind of pepper it in to make the match actually stand out. So where it's like all the times that you would expect that Paige is going to be able to outspeed Elgin's actually able to keep up with him, so it's like it pays off. And then times when you think that Elgin's, you know, power game is just going to be overwhelming, that Paige can overpower or do power moves in general. You know, those little spots, those key little spots, make the match stand out so much more because they're not becoming, like, a big thing. Like the finish. Like the selling from Paige. I think that Paige has a good shot of getting over in New Japan right now. We'll see how the crowd goes, because they're not, you know, you can't necessarily always predict what's going to happen. But he's sympathetic babyface in a lot of ways. The crowd's getting into him. Even though he's still a heel, he's able to sell in a way that gets the crowd behind him. I don't think I gave star rating. I gave the match 3.5 stars. Pretty good. Pretty good action. But, you know, this is where it starts to drain. This is early too, but it's like, this is like, it's weird the way the G1 feels like a grind sometimes.
This block feels like it's rough to get through, honestly.
That's what it is, yeah. It's primarily
there's
just
so many
matches.
Uncompelling matches. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Yeah, no, I'm saying, yeah, that's what it is. It's the A block is just kind of the tough thing to get into this year.
Then we got Yoshihashi versus Evil. What's your stance on this one?
Oh, man. I thought Evil and Yoshihashi were fighting here pretty good. I liked some of the stiffness of the attacks and the chops and stuff like that. And I'm not I was not excited coming into it at all, but I thought that they did pretty good. The firing up from Yoshihashi, ripping off the Band-Aid, throwing the chops, throwing the big lariats. Crowd was getting, you know, kind of getting into it, which is pretty good. Be interested to see where it continues. The powerbomb spill out to the floor was interesting. If it was an actual meant to be thing, or if it was an actual accident, either way.
Now here's a question for you. We talked about injuries and stuff. Is that a spot that was even necessary for the story they were telling, though?
Not at all. And yeah. I hope that it was a spot that was supposed to be in the match, though, because
if it was an accident, that's scary. Either way, it was a risk they didn't need to take because it's not part of the story.
Yeah, yeah. Right, but I guess for booking, or not for booking, but for, like, safety-wise, I don't know if it's scarier if it was an accident, you know?
Yeah.
Just wild, but yeah, either way. You know, I mean, Yoshihashi looked fine. Evil, I was high on Evil before. He's lost some luster, but I think he could still bring it in some places and have some really solid performances with his striking and his... kind of his speed and power game that he's able to pull off. That said, I mean, I wouldn't really give this one a huge kind of dose of saying he did a great job. I gave it 2 and 3/4 stars. It's like, whatever. It was kind of there, but it had some stuff. It had some good fight, some good striking, some good action, but some that sloppiness was fucking scary. Or if it was meant to be and it was an actual angle, that's, like you said, almost equally scary.
Yeah, terrible decision if that was the case. It was an accident. I can get behind it. Okay, you guys messed up. Jesus, be careful. You guys planned that spot. That fuck, shame on everyone involved. I give it 2.5. I'm with you with Evil, where I think he does a lot of stuff really good, and then there's like some stuff like, what the fuck are you doing? Like the chair shots right here are just so overplayed, and they're right in front of the ref. No one gives a shit. Again, the match should have ended in the first minute. I was reffing. Evil starts working the arm. I like the announcers here that were putting over the story and getting the story over. And again, that spot in the corner was just like a WTF moment. If it was an accident or planned, either way, it was either sloppy or just flat out fucking dangerous. Then we got Suzuki versus Makabe. I gave it a fucking dud. Wow. I'm just hating these matches here. Now here the ref just fucking gets mutilated, doesn't do nothing. How Suzuki isn't disqualified is beyond me. Suzuki looks like he fucked up his shoulder on the top rope release German. It looked like Calmus looked like how he landed. It was like J.J. Dillon in the first War Games when he took that clothesline, the Doomsday Device from the Road Warriors. I'm curious about that. But yeah, this was everything I hate. How you abuse a ref for fucking 5 minutes straight and did nothing. What shit. Just shit. No creativity. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I could definitely see that for a lot of the ridiculousness of it when it comes to exposing the referee a lot. I mean, there was some good brawling, fighting action.
Let me interrupt. You know, I know wrestling's fake, but don't throw my fucking face in it. That's what I'm just asking. Give me logic. That's all I'm asking, man.
Right. And, like, you know, the action and the striking and submission holds there's not really much submission holds in this match. There's some stuff that's good, you know, and it feels like they're really butting heads and going at it at times, which is nice in a match, but it does get hurt when, like you said, there was so much other bullshit beforehand, to start it, to really let you be able to get into this seriously as a fight. You know, so I can totally see just not appreciating it at all, basically mostly because of that. God, did I give this a rating? Let me see.
My bad feelings won't be that hurt if you say dud also.
I did not give it a rating, but dud probably seems right. Yeah. I don't know. There's some matches, especially if I'm doing like cardio while I'm watching it, there's no fucking way I'm writing a star rating and like taking the time to do that, you know?
What'd you make of Okada versus Fale?
I liked the opening with Okada like going after all the guys, but it's like completely, second match, completely dropped the idea that like there's something different about him, you know? Because that's like exactly how he opens up matches in settings like that, always. Yeah. You know, jumping, and he's able to take out all those guys with big dives, and oh my god, Okada, he's so amazing to set up fighting this fucking monster. So yeah, then, you know, you go into the ring, it's a lot of the same tropes from these guys together, but these guys do it pretty well together. They've had decent matches in the past. Okada knows how to work with Fale pretty well. He sells for him well, but it would have been nice, yeah, to be like, you know, oh, it's a new thing, it's a new era. He had this terrible situation, so he just completely has just a completely different match with Fale, instead of a lot of the same stuff over again. So basically, he's just the same Okada with like dyed hair, and that's the whole story. Even though it felt like there's going to be more, even the teasing the body slam stuff, like, or, you know, Tombstone or whatever, like Rocky pointed it out. That's like kind of the detriment of the commentary too. It's like the commentary is good, but sometimes they try to be too real and it ruins it. And when you're talking about talking about star ratings, or to me, like some of the stuff that Kevin Kelly does, like referencing Twitter and things like that. Like, it's nice that he references where he gets information, and that's cool. But some of the stuff feels like going a little bit too far, to where it hurts the credibility, or like the feeling like they're a big deal of the company to have the commentator talking about stuff like that. And, and it's connected in some ways to being like real and talking about the real world outside of New Japan and what these fans really care about, when you like have to remember that a lot of people don't give a shit about that stuff. That Rocky then also here, he's like saying like, and there another match that they had before, Okada kept trying to go for the tombstone. And it's like, oh, okay, cool, Rocky. So it's not that he's crazy and looking to hit the body slam because he's lost his mind. It's because he always does that with Fale. It's part of his match type with Fale, is that he builds part of the match around that he's like going to be able to get the big guy up for a body slam, basically doing like the Hulk Hogan thing every fucking match. So, or every time he wrestles Fale, you know? So it's so funny. Like, Rocky, you're like, cool, Rocky, it's really nice of you to like be real and talk about stuff like in context.
Oh, yeah,
but also, like,
this is a token spot in this match. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, cool. Like, you're pointing out that it's like a token spot that he does all the time. So that's fun for the match, I think. That said, I still, like I said, I enjoyed it. I gave it 3 stars. I think, I don't know why, I'm just always higher on Fale than everyone, and I have like literally no reason for it. Other than I just like that he's big.
Oh, that's good. I give it 2.25. And shame on New Japan, because here my note is, I really liked how they set up the interference behind the ref's back. This is what you had me fucking looking for now. Okay? You guys have ruined it. Ruined the thing for me. That I'm looking for fucking interference spots. That makes sense. So we have 2 versus 8. I don't know. But, I mean, Jesus. I mean, that's just sad. Sad. Then we got Tanahashi versus Jay White. I give it 3 stars. Finally, White goes to the knee. It took him a bit. A reverse dragon screw really sets it up. Reverse figure four by White, which I dug. White then moves to the neck. I like Jay White's control here. But again, I didn't think anyone, even with the win against Okada, I didn't think people bought Tanahashi in much jeopardy. That's where I gave it 3 stars. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think I got into it myself a little bit more. Maybe the crowd got into it a little bit more. Because I went, you said you gave it 3 stars?
Three.
Yeah, because I gave it 3.5. So it's like just a little bit higher. I like Tanahashi always doing the kind of counter leg work when after his leg gets worked on. But the only thing that sucks is that I felt like the switch over to the neck was done a little bit abruptly, so that the counter leg work felt a little bit kind of behind the story when Tanahashi went for it. To me, a lot of times he hits like a big defiant dragon screw on someone who's been working his leg, and it comes across that way that he's being like punitive because they're hurting his leg, he hurts theirs. But yeah, I liked the control. I liked a lot of the work from Jay White on top. I thought better than their Tokyo Dome match in some ways. I think Jay White's getting more comfortable. I've heard people saying the opposite. But I think he's kind of putting the character and the work and everything together. And I think part of it, too, is he's been bringing back a little bit more of what he was doing.
Jay White.
Yeah, he's bringing a little bit more Jay White back and, like, that means like not being as slow and methodical and doing some big athletic spots here and there, which good on him, because I think he needs to do something. You know, he can't try to be all kind of meticulous on the top brawling and attacking type stuff, just because it's not as dynamic and it doesn't fit his style. And it's honestly, to be perfectly honest, you said that the thing about the refs watching the interference is sad, but like what's also sad in New Japan is that like I don't know that I can say like a guy can get over without doing high spots in New Japan right now, which is like, you know, just kind of like, oh yeah, what the fuck, you know.
Did Tanahashi do too many high spots?
No, not really. I mean,
high five flow maybe.
Yeah, like he kept it pretty simple in the match, But
he's over. So, I mean, bottom line, if you're that over, you don't have.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I don't know if Jay White needs to start doing that kind of stuff to get over, like, more flying and stuff, you know? I don't know. But I could see it.
And then we shift to night four, and we open up with Tama Tonga versus Sonata. What's your stake here?
Oh, God. I don't think it was that bad. Why am I, like thinking like it was bad, you know? Yeah, I mean, it was pretty bad. Like, I'm looking over my notes, and I'm just like, yeah. The opening stuff up was good. The kind of back and forth between them with the showing off and the dropkick and the standoff and all that and the handshake and everything. But it's like, is Tama Tonga trying to do the Omega thing and he doesn't take the shirt off for a quick match with someone who doesn't really matter to him or whatever, you know? Could see that. Also, could be protests because of the finish being like being the way that it goes, that he didn't want to like put everything into the match because he was losing, which I think would be fucking weird. But it also, you know, it plays off of that it's a flash kind of out of nowhere finish or whatever.
And then, well, if that's the case, shame on him because he needs to get over because they're building a faction around him. So
I know.
Bring it, you know, it's going to be pretty sad when you get crickets when you're in a feud. Go on.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I gave it 2.25 star. I thought that there was, you know, there was some. You know what? I gave it 2 star. I don't know why I even said good the quarter.
Yeah, I went 2 also. Yeah. I thought the bullshit early did nothing for me. It was just an average match. Just there. Then we got Zack Sabre Jr. versus Yano, and God darn it, they have a good match. 3.5 stars. I love how they work Yano on the mat and working this, and it's a total blast. I just liked it. It just worked. How they're able to move in some of Yano's stuff with Zach. They meshed it. And the bottom line, I just love seeing Zach torturing Yano. 3.5, good stuff. Really. Shockingly good, which just shows how damn good Zack Sabre Jr. is. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, 3.25, same deal really. I thought Yano, you know, playing up Yano being able to grapple with Zack, or at least thinking he could maybe for a second, and then just getting picked apart is a great story. The facials from Yano are all over the place and wild, obviously with his eyes bugging out of his head as he's just getting stretched out. The stuff, you know, teasing in with the finish and the low blow caught turned into the UK clutch or whatever they're calling it. It was great. Three and a quarter from me. Great match, great chemistry. Zach's obviously a star, and the theme of Toriano rolls on with him having decent matches in the tournament this year.
What did you make of Juice versus Ibushi?
Really awesome, wild stuff in the beginning. That huge moonsault to the floor, obviously crazy. Everyone's making a big deal about. Great spot, you know, from there. Juice kind of, you know, fighting from underneath when he could. Big moves. Using his power, I thought, well here. And it's something that I think Juice could get over a little bit, is his thickness and, like, being able to muscle some guys around a bit here and there. It's kind of like I talked about adapting the Adam Page thing. I think that Juice's size gets overlooked completely because of being a good seller, but... You know, sometimes when he gets serious and muscles a guy up or hits a real nice hard strike, I think you could put over his size a little bit there. So liked feeling like I thought he was muscling Ibushi around a little bit at points here and there. No real issues with and this is weird to say it for a guy who really like, but like for Juice being like having a little bit of botchy stuff here and there on the tournament already. Again, could be the hand thing. No real sloppiness or botching stuff here from Juice. So good stuff. The win for Ibushi makes sense. Ibushi feels like he's getting pushed big here. Obviously, I think a lot of people think Omega Ibushi at some kind of interaction in this tournament is going to be very important to the ending of it. So much so that I think a lot of people think Ibushi's going to win it. So, you know, a loss to a guy who's that much of a favorite's not terrible for Juice. He does have that title, so it does make it interesting because you do think that there's no reason why Ibushi would challenge for the U.S. title, but maybe he will. We'll see where they go from there. Yeah, good match.
Did you give it a star rating?
Oh, shit, I did not. I gave it 3 stars.
I went 3 3/4. I think Juice is turning into a star. He's showing a lot more charisma. I like Juice work in the neck and back area. Ibushi's standing Rana off the apron was awesome and a momentum changer. Followed up with a moonsault off the top post of the ring. I thought they did a great job of working the mat early, building to bigger moves. As an escalation level, I thought the match escalated very well and led to a nice finish. Then we got Naito versus Ishii. I like Naito's heat here. And it's neat and but focused. Loving Naito spitting while Ishii is destroying him with chops. I thought it was a nice touch. Had a big battle feel to it. And I gave it a 4 1/4. Really enjoyed it. What about you? What were your thoughts?
Naito versus Ishii? Yeah. This is the match where I'm kind of like more talking about the if you're going to be comparing it to the past, because these guys had like one of the best, you know, Ishii matches I can remember for that title match a while back with the leg work and all that, with Ishii, that I thought was phenomenal. And so I'm like, yeah, this match was good, but it felt more like, you know, just the bomb fest that you would expect with no extra depth to it. So that's where I'm like, why wouldn't you pick this match apart more for like not having lived up to the history that the people have? But again, that was not what that argument was about. That argument was about star ratings and how Meltzer's star ratings are actually important. Which I guess, you know, I mean, I'm not shitting on Meltzer. It's not about Meltzer. That's about like watching wrestling isn't about what Meltzer rates things, and like on top of it, yeah, like, you know,
the bottom line should be all about what you think anyway. So
yeah, exactly. So this is a dumb, you know, talking point to care about so much, but whatever, you know, it's a good match. Ishii shows great fire. I love when he's being a little bit dismissive to Naito, kind of like that little bit of wink and kind of playing off of Naito's character. So, you know, Ishii is, I kind of like that about Ishii. He's got a little kind of joking around. Loved the pan into the crowd, getting the big American fan in the crowd doing the crotch chops during the double down sequence. I felt like that really added to the drama of the match. And I shouldn't, you know, just say that he's definitely American. He was just a white guy in general, you know. So, but yeah, that definitely added to the narrative of the match. I felt to make sure that you knew that basically. The LIJ is just the DX of Japan, I guess, is what that was, to make sure that everyone was aware of. Both guys great at selling at the finishes of matches. Great at selling in general, but selling that the like finish of match has been like a real war and getting the match over in that regard. Loved the stumbling to the back from Ishii, getting iced up just from the big assault that he took, especially with the neck attacks. I think that Ishii plays into the neck stuff on himself pretty well, or it's real and his neck is really fucked up all the time, because he does a good job of writing that line and making sure that you make like neck injuries and stuff be believable. But also it could just be that he lets himself get injured because he really wants to get star ratings. That seems insane. I didn't give it a rating. I gave it 3 3/4 stars.
What'd you make of Omega and Goto?
Really good action. I thought that good stuff playing off the history. Loved the brawling in the crowd. Big moonsault to the floor was nuts. In the bleachers. Big moonsault from the bleachers. It was just like wild. And I like people mentioned it, so I'm not going to take credit for being like noticing, but that Ibushi also did a big crazy moonsault in his match as well, but Omega kind of one-umped it by doing it in the crowd. So that could be a story moving forward with a lot of people not realizing that Omega is actually this crazy megalomaniac. And like, you know, right now I think people are like, think like, oh, Cody was just like conniving and trying to take Omega's place, and then, you know, then you think about like the Bullet Club breakup, and then now, you know, the stuff with Ibushi could lead into more of saying like maybe the issue is Kenny actually, and it's not like it's not necessarily that like those the people who have an issue and are trying to like or like people that he keeps close and break away from him are not just like jerks, basically. So yeah, that was a weird wrinkle that I like. All I noticed was someone, or all I heard was someone saying that they both did moonsaults, but the rest of the stuff is like, you know, a theory that you could come across with that seemingly being positioned as a big story of the G1, with that being like late in the tournament, big match, big main event, with Omega versus Ibushi. It could also just be they go at it and they have like their DDT match where they do all their spots, which could be really fucking cool and fun to see how a New Japan crowd would react to something like that. If they can still pull it off, Kenny is, you know, bigger now than he was back then, to say the least. That said, this match, after the crowd brawling and stuff, kind of settled into a big fight. Goto brought it with the heavy artillery. Kenny, I like when Kenny kind of mans up and stands toe-to-toe with the big guy, but did a little bit of that here, but also like didn't milk it for the drama that it could have been worth. It really felt like it was more, I hate to say it, but a little bit more go-go-go and Kenny Omega not really even paying attention to the breathing room. And that's funny because we talked about it earlier that people saying he's not as good as champion, and I think that that those same people would probably not think about the fact that the reason why is because he's being spottier. And like that's why he's not as good as the champion, which is like almost counterintuitive. You would think that when he became champion, he would have bigger matches with more psychology, especially when he's making this joke in this book about reading the psychology and that's how he gets star ratings. But then, yeah, as soon as he's champion, he's having matches that are just spot, spot, spot. And the crowd is like, or the, at least the like smart crowd or semi-smart crowd is like noticing it, but in a way where all they pick up is like he's not as good as he was before, which is interesting. That said, I give the match 4 stars, actually. I liked the action quite a bit. Kenny Omega, I mean, yeah, like Kenny Omega probably could be the best wrestler in the world, I think. People like kind of say that. I don't think that, you know, 9 of his coworkers are all the other 10 best wrestlers in the world or whatever, but I do think that he could be. I also do think that, like, it depends on how you grade things. And again, we talked about that before with Roddy Strong. I mean, in some ways, I don't know if he's the best wrestler in the world because Roddy Strong is there. And if you're going to say that Kenny Omega is the best, I'm like, well, Roddy Strong clearly is just as good and has as few fucking matches where he gets to show it off, but like you can tell how talented he is. Is that what we're grading? Because if we're grading that, then Omega's not the best wrestler in the world. You know, that's kind of the weird takeaway there on that.
I give it 3.25. Right off, we get another fucking chair shot right in front of the ref. For having the greatest worker in the world right now in Kenny Omega, I think he could come up with something a little bit more imaginative. G-Wit and right in front of the ref. Brawling in the stands. Omega moonsault from the top. It looks like he was having too much fun. He was smiling. You know, please don't pretend. Try not to pretend. I mean, it took me out of the match that he wasn't, didn't feel like he was taking it like serious. Like it didn't matter. I don't know what, I can't put quite my finger on it, but I just did not particularly care for it. There's some good stuff in it, but it was terribly flawed for me. And on that note, we're going to move over to G1 Night 5. What do you think of Jay White versus Michael Elgin?
This was another one that I thought was a solid showing for, honestly, both guys. I was going to say Jay White, but then I thought about Elgin having pretty good showings as well so far. You know, there is some gratuitousness, obviously, but you know, obviously ref bumps galore again. You know, crazy spots, stuff on the apron, big bombs over and over again. Elgin, I think, teasing the burning hammer, which to me is almost as just as bad as doing it for him, if I'm perfectly honest. Just because, you know, I know that's really fucking stupid, but I don't like the idea of Elgin doing the burning hammer, especially in Japan. Which, again, probably super dumb, because, like, when you think about it, Mark Briscoe did the burning hammer forever on ROH shows as, like, a little kid, but in Japan, it's just different. It's especially different in Japan, and it's, I guess, you know, not a move, not just a move there. He didn't hit it, because that would have been worse. But yeah, Jay White again here, more active, and I think that bringing out that action from him is going to be a good thing for him overall, honestly. I think that trying to do a big character switch and a big kind of wrestling style switch at the same time was a bad call, and that's, I think it's correcting, though, so that's good. Liked the low blow finish, with, I mean, at least the ref was knocked down, so, you know, it's just with the repetitiveness of every Jay White match having a fucking referee bump, it's just ridiculous. Like, I don't know, how can he have it every match? He can't have ref bumps in every match. It's just, I don't know.
Well, how can he have interference in every match? Yeah, so far we have.
I know. And chairs, and just, yeah, it's just, this is early to be this graded on by stuff like this in the G1.
Usually it takes a while for these tropes to bother you. But,
But it feel, it's just like putting on an old pair of shoes at this point, because they get, it's getting bad year over year. I don't think
these tropes are really grating on me, because I can't even remember the 20 spot near countdown spot that always drives me nuts, but I've learned to accept it. But I don't know if they've done it that much so far.
They've actually done it a couple times.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's like,
I'm so obsessed with other things. I remember it once or twice, but usually they do it at least four times out of five matches.
Yeah.
So they even got that down a little bit. Oh, did you get a star rating?
Yes, 2.5.
Yeah, I went 3.5. Everything you said, I agree. One of the things I really loved about, I loved, was White taking a bump off an Elgin chop. I loved it. But man, that apron spot was nuts. Hard hitting. Just what you expect from these two. Then we got Suzuki versus Yoshihashi. Suzuki's destroying the arm. Suzuki really, though, outclasses Yoshihashi here, where you believe in Suzuki, you don't believe in Yoshihashi. That elbow strike was just nasty by Suzuki. I still give it 3.5. Because, I mean, Yoshihashi sold well. But you don't believe in a minute that little pipsqueak, little scrawny, little non-athletic-looking, funny hair guy could beat Minoru Suzuki is just unfathomable. What were your thoughts?
I mean, there should be an actual term for funny hair-looking guy, because they run into needing to say that a lot, and it's an awkward phrase to put on someone. But yeah, his look is fucked. His look is all jacked over. They got the, like, kind of seemingly Nakamura tribute pants going on.
Which I like better than his old stupid pants.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Better than the Genie pants, I'll tell you that.
But it's the only issue with it is just that it comes across so much like Nakamura. And that's, like, all the depth of his character is that, like, him and Nakamura were buddies or whatever. They're like, you know,
yeah, but at least his pants are different colors than the Nags.
Yeah, they have the stripe and all that. But yeah, I mean, he is not even Nakamura, and Nakamura was strongly flawed. So, I mean, fuck, you know, and I think a lot of people are finding that out in the WWE, finally. And it's pretty funny to hear people talking about it. Because they had bought in, I guess, based on GIFs of people dancing. And now they have to explain that opinion. That said, yeah, I couldn't buy into it, but I liked the action, if that makes sense. Like, I thought that it was executed well.
Same here.
But I just, you don't get into him. Suzuki didn't really even get a chance to bring it too much with, like, kind of what I like from him, which is the facials from the torch when he's kind of torturing guys. Because they gave a lot of the match to Yoshihashi. It was, like, mostly Yoshihashi, and Suzuki comes back towards the end, and that's really it. It was, like, interesting to me, it's interesting to set the matchup that way, because what's been great is Suzuki's work. But I mean, I guess you don't want to overexpose it every match, you know. But this is kind of two back to back, because the match with Makabe was more about brawling, and then this match where he does more about him selling. So we'll see where they go from here. Hopefully, he does have a few more good kind of grappling showings in the tournament.
What do you think of Evil versus Makabe?
Surprisingly, probably better than I expected. Makabe, I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it is the fact that the other tropes are so just becoming overbearing, but Makabe is not annoying me as much this year as, like, last year or the year before.
Well, there was another chair shot in front of the ref in this match, but, of course, yes. Evil's involved.
Yeah, because Evil has to do it, but, you know, Makabe just kind of being there isn't as just personally offensive to me as it's been in the past. But, yeah, I mean, his is a spot that could be, like, you talk about Jeff Cobb. When you said that, I hadn't thought of it, which is funny because, you know, why would I not think about Jeff Cobb being in the G1? But now I'm thinking about it, and it is like, yeah, it's easily a spot that could have gone to someone better, but it also didn't feel like a complete waste of a person this year as it has in the past. Evil is good at what he's good at, but I think he's just missing something with the crowd. The crowd seemed to be into him, and like I said, he can wrestle big and small, but I just don't get with the crowd. Like, I think that he just isn't going to ever get over as a star, honestly.
Well, the gimmick, it's a little over the top, too, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. I'm not, like, completely overlooking that or, like, trying to pretend like I overlook that just because, you know, it's convenient or something. But yeah, I mean, obviously the gimmick hurts his chances of getting over super big at all. But also something about his work, too. I mean, maybe it's just it goes hand in hand. But yeah, I like some of the stuff where they're big bulls going at each other with just hitting big lariats and stuff. And they're not doing it in a way that's, like, super dangerous and giving each other brain damage. So, you know, kudos to them for that, I'll say. Solid, safe work that got over as, like, a brawl, but from two guys who are, like, one's in the back end of his career and one is, like, maybe going to end up slotted as being, like, not ever getting much higher than this. So, realistically, nothing, like, super exciting. 2.75.
Yeah, I went 2.5, and like I said, there was a chair shot in front of the ref again. That the ref supposedly doesn't see. Enjoyed the clotheslines in the bleachers section. Still, they could have been count out. The count out wasn't enforced. This is a fun little fight, but yeah, again, there's so many flaws and stuff that bothered me, that really irks me. I it's hard for me to think much more of the match. 2.5. Then we have Tanahashi with Bad Luck Fale, and then there's Tanahashi just showing you how to work. He's out to the legs. I'm really digging Tanahashi's shine with the leg work. Big reversal changes the tide. Fale's heat is pretty nasty and violent, using his size. Tanahashi again after the knee. Some real believable near falls. Crowd was bonkers on the counter of the Fale's finisher. Finally, a ref has some balls and does a DQ. Finally, I think what I want to say, at least 10 of these out of the first 25 matches, I think 10 of them had blatant interference spots in them, and it took finally freaking almost 40% of your matches have some form of not just interference, but right in front of your ref. Or beating a ref up, and it finally took you that long to DQ. God help, what? It had bad taste. But 3.75 because Tanahashi can work. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I also gave it 3.75, so same on that. Very similar feeling. Great work. I think I'm into the DQ kind of storyline, but like also how fucking blatant it is like really ruining everything, because I mean even like this match gets kind of thrown out for ref bump essentially, and like I've been talking about that they're 2-for-2 with ref bumps for Jay White's matches, so you know it is kind of interesting to see that, you know, oh, it can be a DQ if it's in this match and other
stuff. And at least I can buy a ref bump because at least it's not intentional per se, you know,
right,
it just happens, but with a lot of this stuff it's intentional. and you're doing it in front of the ref.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, we'll
see. Yeah, I wasn't even counting the ref bumps as part of my numbers here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the ones in Jay White's are just ridiculous when he's...
Yeah, I don't mind interference if it's behind the ref's back. I didn't count. I'm not counting the Tamatonga stuff either.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess my point is more like that the ref DQs Fale here for what is essentially just bumping the ref. Like,
yeah.
You know? So then there being so many ref bumps that happen and they're not DQ'd, then it does make it more blatant that, like, yeah, like, it's...
But also the ref DQ'd him because Tamatonga ran in and stun gunned him and knew it and knew that would happen.
I mean, okay.
That's where I got the DQ for him.
Okay,
got the ref bump. I viewed it as him... Seeing Tamatonga hit Tanahashi with the stun gun and DQing him. And then brag on the ring, on the floor, celebrating, thinking they pulled another one past him, but this time he caught him.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, either way, I think that the angle makes it still kind of obvious, or like the way that it's set up and what it's surrounded with makes it obvious that it's an angle just about this group, you know, and that he's...
Yeah.
He's doing DQs to them, and it's not just... Like,
and they're the ones not doing it in front of them.
Right, exactly.
they're the ones actually doing it covertly.
Right, I know. So, yeah, that said, I said I gave it 3¾. Yeah.
So I guess in the New Japan world, or ref's eyes, it's okay to do it in front of their face because that's honorable. Doing it behind their backs is dishonorable.
Yeah, that's
and that,
yeah.
Is that the case?
It might be, actually. That would be not insane.
And that's fucked up.
Yeah, right.
It's psychology.
We'll see. I mean, yeah, that's interesting. I don't know that... I honestly, now I'm more worried that it goes anywhere that involves getting the ref so involved in the angle to the detail where you know the answer to something like that, because that would not be good.
I mean, can you imagine Jim Cornette using the ether rag? It's okay if he does it in front of the ref.
Yeah, well, I mean, historically, refs are very lenient when it comes to poisons and chemicals in matches.
Yeah, but he always did it behind his back. He never did it in front of them. I'd love to see him do it in front of the ref. I'm curious with the New Japan psychology if that's okay. I mean, that's what it's telling me. They're telling me it's okay. It doesn't matter if you do it in front of me.
Yeah, which does seem to repeatedly be happening.
Yeah, this is going to be a talking point for a while. All right.
Right. Which is, yeah.
Sad. It shouldn't be. You should be talking about the wrestling, not this shit.
They have such great wrestling, too. Jesus. Yeah.
What do you think of the main event?
The main event, I was concerned going in that the main event was being advertised as this. But I thought that they did a relatively good job of delivering. Yeah, I thought that Okada... you know, did his thing, open the match, sell, come back, hit some slick spots, you know, the kind of the all the time kind of Okada match setup, but still, I mean, I thought that Adam Page got over on top, kind of roughneck, and even kind of got some heel heat, but then, you know, underneath from selling, I think he still got over selling when Okada was in control, you know, before the finish there. So I think that he's riding that line, and I think he could get turned. That's why I say I think he could be a star, because I feel like the crowd is getting into him. So I think he's a guy who could be turned babyface pretty relatively easily. As I think the crowd, like I said, the crowd got into him, not just underneath selling, but also when he's throwing some big forearms and stuff like that as well. So yeah, going from there, I think from the match itself, I liked the finish being really decisive, just to hit the hard Rainmaker and it's over, showing that maybe Okada is getting something back together. It also felt like even the dye in his hair is like kind of slowly faded out, so it's like that could almost be telling that he's whatever was wrong with him is slowly fading away. But it's like it's kind of on the nose and corny, but. Could easily see that being even part of the story that they're trying to tell. Like I said, good action. I gave it 3 stars. It's like, it's kind of, I kind of feel bad with it being the main event of the show. I was like kind of questioning why you would even main event with this, really. But again, we talked about it earlier. It's like Okada on the banner is the main event to a lot of people. So you don't want to risk a lot of different things by having him not actually in the main event.
Yeah, I went 3.5, and I'm with you. I'm pretty much on everything. So that's that, you know. Kind of, you know, I was lukewarm going into this. The ref stuff's really bothering me, obviously. Where it's almost detracting away from matches. So the G1's done a very bad thing and done from a guy who I think I've been fair with New Japan, where I've liked it, like the style, and like the match quality for the most part. But man, there's some bullshit going on really hardcore right now, and it's really getting to me. Hopefully they turn it around for me on the overuse of the ref, but I don't see it happening. But I just wish they'd be more creative and just, I mean, shit, if you're gonna cheat, fucking do it behind the ref's back, do it in front, fuck. What were your overall thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, be okay with having matches diverge from the kind of the same structure, length, everything all the time. It feels like that's another move in the right direction. They're doing that a little bit, but I feel like they could do it a lot more. Really drop the pretense of, you know, the big matches have to have these big finishes every time and this big heat and all this extra stuff that's, like, to me, killing a lot of the excitement. And it's, in some ways, it's what built the excitement, but it's kind of like I'm trying to even think of what they call it, but like booking, it's kind of like booking just too fast and like rushing through and just getting like big things to pop and not really focusing on long term, getting the heat to boil, you know, bring it up to a simmer and boil or whatever. So yeah, I don't know if the genie's out of the bag or if it's something that they can correct, but it feels like they kind of are. Some guys are kind of feeling like they're course correcting and actually like developing the character. I think Jay White is one. Feels like he's developing his character and actually making more of it rather than kind of reverting back or falling off. I think I'm actually okay with the Bullet Club, whatever the Tongan group is called, the OGs. I'm into the gimmick with them and what's going on there, so we'll look forward to that developing. I think Tama Tonga is developing well, but then it feels like the weird thing is it's like all that stuff that's interesting, Adam Page stuff, that feels like the stuff that's kind of not necessarily set in stone, but like that not much is going to come out of. And then meanwhile, the up top like feels just super boring and like, oh, you know, one of these guys is going to win and they're going to beat each other and then they're going to get the big match and all that. So it's weird because it's like the stuff that should feel consequential doesn't, and the stuff that doesn't feel consequential kind of does. It's like backwards in the way that the matches feel importance-wise coming out, which is not the way the G1 has felt historically. Still, I mean, realistically, wrestling is very good overall on the shows, so it's hard to complain too much.
All right. On that note, man, anything you want to plug?
No, same old, same old. Just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Follow me on Twitter at Titans of Wrestling. Check me out on WorldCast Wednesdays. Our next show next Wednesday, we're going to actually do a live talking over the show while we're watching a type of episode. So it'll be something a little different for a change. So keep up watching wrestling. Find something you like and enjoy it. And gosh, there you go. Catch you guys later. Bye.
I was tired of my lady. We'd been together too long. Like a worn-out recording of a favorite song. So while she lay there sleeping, I read the paper in bed. And in the personal columns, there was this letter I read. If you like Pina Colada,